I listen to the black guy who tips because Rod and Karen are hot.
Heroin. As a nation, we've mostly forgotten about the devastation heroin wrought in urban America 50 years ago. When I talk in my law school classroom about the war on drugs, my students usually assume that I'm speaking about the response to crack, which ravaged black communities in the 1980s and 1990s. A few students have firsthand memories of the crack epidemic. The rest have either read about it or seen it represented in movies and said on TV. But when I tell them that heroin was to the 60s what crack was to the late 80s, I get blank stares. Their amnesia comes at a cost. Without taking heroin into account, one cannot understand African-American attitudes towards the drug war. Heroin had long troubled D.C. A 1955 government report called the city's drug problem serious and tragic and expensive and ominous. But by the late 1960s, what had been a problem became an epidemic. Heroin began to devour the city's poor black neighborhoods. Studies at the D.C. Central Detention Facility, commonly known as the D.C. Jail, revealed the extent of the crisis. In the early to mid-1960s, less than 3% of new inmates were addicted to heroin. But beginning in 1967, the growth rate exploded, tripling. By 1968, then tripling again by February 1969. By June 1969, an astonishing 45% of men admitted to jail were addicts. In the city itself, the number of addicts rose from 5,000 in the early 1970 to 18,000 by Christmas of that same year. By 1971, there were about 15 times more heroin addicts in Washington, D.C. than in all of England.
Goddamn.
These addicts were overwhelmingly likely to be young black men. Many had dropped out of school. The former Urban League executive director Whitney Young warned that children as young as 11 or 12 were dying from heroin overdoses. But the drug didn't simply destroy its users' own lives. Each new addict was another person, strung out, unemployable, and often desperate, whose number one priority was securing the means to stay high. A study of Washington, D.C. and three other cities found that the average heroin addict committed more than 300 crimes a year. The devastation in these cities' poor black communities took many forms. As overdose deaths skyrocketed, parents buried their children. As fear of robberies and burglaries spread, residents stayed home with doors and windows bolted shut. As desperate young addicts resorted to stealing from their kin, families were forced to turn against their own. Hey, welcome to the Blackout Tips Podcast. Your host, Rod and
Karen.
And we're live on a Saturday morning, ready to talk about your feedback, all the stuff that you had to say about the things that we had to say. We appreciate everybody takes time out to leave feedback throughout the week, whether it's 5-star reviews, whether it's comments on our website, theblackguywhotips.com, whether it's votes in the polls on the website, voicemails, emails at theblackguywhotips@gmail.com, all of that stuff. You know, some of you guys take the time out to give money. You can go to theblackguywhotips.com. Look on the right hand side and there's a bunch of places where you can like give us money and stuff like that. We appreciate everybody takes the time out to do that. Okay.
Donations. 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 Donations.
Okay. We are into that. We
appreciate that. Come on, donations.
Matter of fact, didn't we get a letter this week? I don't think I had that letter that we got from the post office.
We did. I go get it.
All right. So, but yeah, people mailed us something and Karen Wayne got the envelope out of the car. We got all that stuff. And like I said, voicemails, they have to be 2 minutes or less. 704-557-0186 is where you leave the voicemails. We appreciate everybody takes the time out to do that. The official weapon of the show is
a taser,
an unofficial sport,
football.
A bullet ball extreme. And the excerpt that I read today is from the same book from last time, Locking Up Our Own by James Foreman Jr. I just think people should think about crime holistically and the solutions to crime holistically. I know we're at a polarizing time where everyone's getting really caught up in a lot of rhetoric and a lot of like, do this or you're a coon, or if you feel, you know, I don't need to explain shit, just do it. And I think in order to not repeat the mistakes of the past, I think we need to know the past. And
yes,
in case you don't know, you know, this is a, hopefully it was an eye-opening for me to read about the heroin epidemic and how it was really crack before crack. You know, I never knew that. I had heard about it before, you know, you see it every once in a while depicted in a movie or something, but right. When you put the numbers to it like this and you're sitting there going 45% of the people in of the black men who were incarcerated in the DC, just DC, by the way,
right? This is not, as always, happening today, it's happening all across the country.
Yeah, the DC jail, 45% of these men were addicts that were admitted that, and this, and the exponential growth of this, you know, less than 3% of new inmates were addicted to heroin, and then that, you know, by 1969. So you're talking the mid 1960s, less than 3%. It starts exploding in 1967. 2 years later. 45%, you know,
that goes to tell you how addictive it is
and how much it was ravaging our community specifically.
Right,
you see what this opioids does to white people. Opioids ain't nothing but the rebranded heroin,
right? And but and now all of a sudden, you know, you want to have, you want to change the laws, you want to have compassion. Oh, all of a sudden there are people now, but there were people before.
And heroin is one of those drugs that's so addictive, the cure to the drug, or not cure, but the treatment for the drug is more drugs. It's a different methadone. They just try to get you off. It's like less effective heroin. They try to wean you off of it slowly. And some people, they're just like, you're gonna be living with this forever. You're gonna be doing methadone for the rest of your life, you know. Yeah, just because the withdrawal for it is so painful. People die from the withdrawals, like, and this is heroin. And you know, the thing I liked about this part is that he basically, because he's right, the amnesia essentially of this, we are not taught this in schools. Our parents and our families don't really talk about the heroin epidemic among black people. And you know, like you said, you talk to a student, they're gonna, when you say drugs ravishing the black community, first thing we think is crack.
Yeah, because that was my time.
It's the most recent one, but it's also the one that was more in our pop culture. We talked about it more as a community. You couldn't avoid it, you know. And so I think that these type of things get lost to time. And then when you hear about the average addict commits up to 300 crimes a year.
That's a lot.
45%.
Committing up to,
think about all those people,
300 crimes a year.
Think about how a neighborhood could feel terrorized.
Right.
Think about how a neighborhood might reach out and want policing.
Demand it.
Think about how what we consider caring about the black community at that point becomes, white people don't care about us because they're not locking up the offenders. And keep in mind, in many people's minds, whether they were community leaders, priests, activists, whatever, many of them were saying, well, this isn't black people. This is a small percentage of black people. And if we get these people out of the community, then the rest of us will thrive. Now, of course, we find out that's that's not true.
Right. Because
racism is still out here.
Right. And at the end of the day, you have to address the root of the problem, which is the addiction.
Yeah. Racism is still out here. You know,
because the thing is, they still care, and that's the thing. They cared about the community. They was like, well, this is causing a problem. We need to get rid of the people that's causing the problem. But they're not like, fuck them people. You know, some may have been, but they probably were not like, fuck them people. They were like, we just need to get you out of here. We want you to get help. Mm-hmm. We don't want to disown you. We don't want you to be separated from the community, but you can't stay here.
Right. And then because of how racism works, they weren't looking at addiction as a problem of, I mean, in the community, they started out this way, of course, treatment, getting people back within the community, getting people to jobs, things like this. But white people don't see us that way. So who runs these systems? Most of the time, white people, and for profit in a capitalistic America. So you're talking about people that really were saying, fuck these black people. I don't care if they're on drugs or not. Like, they're in my jail now and I get certain amounts of money for that. And solving this problem doesn't really bother me on a moral level because it's not my community.
Right.
I don't feel a need to rehab these people and then get them back into the world. Like, just throw them in jail and whatever happens to them doesn't matter.
It happens.
You know, and for a lot of black people too, within the community, there was the activism and the wokeness of that time was a lot of people turning against drug dealers. You know, a high irony that in my lifetime, many of the pop culture icons were glorifying drug dealing.
Yes.
you know, considering that, you know, at that time it was persona non grata, and it's in a lot of the media at the time, a lot of black exploitation films, it's getting the pimps and the pushers out of the hood, you know, that type of thing. And to think that fast forward 30 years and, you know, all my favorite rappers are, I sell drugs to the community, you know? So what people thought was right at the time is interesting, because they're not, like, the things that we thought were cool at the time, the things that we thought were right at the time, end up being the same things that damn us later. And it keeps happening over and over. I don't know that the current crop of ideas that are out there will necessarily fix anything, or if they will fix things but cause different problems. I mean, everyone thought, you know, these were the solutions at the time. Jailing everybody and getting the, we get these people off the street, then the rest will be fine, and then we can concentrate on getting these people to like come back around to society and believe in themselves and stuff like that. The thing you have to start with here, and this is the hardest thing for most people, and I don't know what will ever be done by this, but you have to start with the idea that what if the people who made these decisions did not have your worst interest in mind? What if they didn't have bad intentions?
Right. If you nobody start, wants to think that.
If you start there, then you don't, when you're examining the history of some of these problems, I feel like you'll arrive at more fair conclusions. I feel like a lot of people's conclusions are so unfair, and it's what blinds us now to thinking that we're the righteous ones. We got it all figured out. Our solutions have no holes, no flaws. If they just would do this, it would be easily solved. But humanity is a Rubik's Cube. You can't just flip it like that and then boom, everything's over. Like you move one piece, you're moving 10 other pieces, and there's going to be consequences for every move that you make. And what are you willing to deal with, you know?
Yeah. And it's hard for people to think too, because you have, you know, it's a generational thing. It's hard for the next generation to think that they think they're special. Every generation thinks they're special. Yeah. And every generation think that they are the first one to come up with these ideas, and these ideas have never been thought of before. Or if they have, now we have better technology. If they have, now, you know, there's these X, Y, and Z factors. But at the end of the day, racism is going to racism.
Right.
And so no matter how much technology you have, no matter how fast your computers are, no matter how much intelligent assistance you have, no matter how good your stats and statistics are, it does not matter if people are not willing to look at them and actually make the statistics matter and the laws and the policies and the procedures that they put in place, because you've got to care about the people when you put these things in place.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. Like I say, I'm pragmatic, and at the same time I'll try to be realistic, and you know, I still try to sneak in and be hopeful when I can too, you know. But there's just so much shit we've gone through that is not well documented, researched, or taught. And there's so many things, solutions, and things we've tried that end up getting co-opted, or just, you know, they're impossible ideals for anyone to live up to, any race of any kind. And yet we're in such a precarious position that for us it's life or death all the time. And we never know what is gonna work and what doesn't work and why it won't work. So but yeah, to think, you know, we've been under police, we've been over police, we've been left to our own devices, we've been fucking meddled with, we built our own communities from the ground up with its own economy, and we've had it burned down, and we've had we've integrated, and we've been tortured, killed, and oppressed for that. Like,
we separated, you know, and it's a problem too. It's like, it is a no-win situation.
The plight of blackness in America is just so fraught, you know, with drugs, through drugs that have ravaged our community, you know, people that have sold drugs in our community. Like, it's, you know, and then at the same time, we're the only ones that had that passion for ourselves. We're the only ones, you know, people go, what about black on black crime? Motherfucker, we the only ones that care.
Yeah.
You've never been to a march started by another community trying to help solve black on black crime. Right. It's us, you know? Like, we just have we are beset upon by on all sides, and internally we fight, and there's all kinds of stuff within the group too, you know? Like, there's no real solid unity, because, you know, people don't feel unified.
Right, and the thing that frustrates me about when people say black on black crime across the board, but particularly when black people say, what about black on black crime? I'm looking at them, like you said, we don't know when it cares. And in your local community, wherever you are, most people don't even know there is some stop the violence. There is some form of that in your local community somewhere that's constantly marching, constantly protesting, constantly doing these things. But you know what's not there? White eyes. And because white eyes are not there, they're not pushing it in the media. It's not in front of your face. So to you, quote unquote, it looks like, well, we don't care until somebody gets shot in the street. Well, those people are out there when people get shot in the street and nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah, Google it. I guarantee we've done it before on the show. Like, you know, Google it. If you care about black on black crime,
if you truly care.
Yeah, Google it in any fucking city in the world, in America. It's already a black organization that works on that. So, you know, and then think, why haven't I heard of this organization before? And also think to yourself, why haven't you looked it up before? Why is it only when a cop kills a black person and you want a distraction that you start thinking about black on black crime and nobody does nothing about that? Like, how about you people do something about it, but why don't you care unless you want to get a distraction from the police killing us?
Right. And the thing is, I know for a lot of these organizations, it has to be very, very frustrating because these people are on the ground in these communities, which I mean, they know the community, they know the streets, they know the people. I know it has to be frustrating for them when something major happens and you have this influx of people coming into the community. A lot of times these places, a lot of times they're underfunded. They can't do everything that they desire to do because they don't have the money. Then you have people on these outside sources come in, literally take all the money that a lot of times should be going to these communities, then leave with that money, and these people are still stuck and they're not able to do the things that they need to do, but the violence still happens.
And the last thing I'll say about that is police kill us and don't go to jail ever. Like, so that's one of the reasons that you'll see a lot more people bringing that up, because if someone kills a black person up the street, they normally end up in jail for doing that shit. Maybe not quote unquote long enough and punitive enough for some people, but there's normally repercussions when we know who killed a black person, and they get, you know, like when we know something happens to that black person. But when it's a cop, doesn't matter if they have it on video or not, they normally do just fine.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere, for friends to know and ways to grow. A reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow, a reading rainbow.
All right, let's talk about the people who went to the website, theblackguywhotips.com, and donated to the show, okay?
Donations. 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 Donations.
Let's get into it. Play me in, Kirk.
I dedicate this song to recession, depression, and unemployment. This song's for you.
Today's a new day.
New day, new pay. Let's talk about the people that took the time out to donate to the show. Tiffany B, thank you very much for your recurring donation. Charlotte Huang Esquire, please say the Esquire.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia P, thank you so much. Jane M, we appreciate you, Jane. Lindsay B, appreciate you. Jeff F, Palmetto Stone Magic, Alfonso M, Autumn W, David C, James C, Bridget R, Damien R, Bambi, Dr. Bambi, thank you very much.
Yes.
Nicola C, got a one-time donation from Sabrina P, who says, send in because Rod and Karen are hot. This is Sabrina, relatively new premium tipper, and the lady from Twitter that is attempting to buy black whenever possible. The work that you two, the two of you do means so much to me, and I am channeling my best Queen and Jay. Play black women. You can get it too in this too, Rod. Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
A very high compliment. Have a wonderful week. Stay safe and continue to bring the comedy and help us laugh through our pain. We shall. It's the only way.
Come on.
Kevin W. Jason F. Donna N. Kemp, our girl Falcons Diva. Got a one-time donation from Georgia M who says, one day, money will come as much as I and as fast as the sarcasm.
Come on, one day. We all there for that one day.
Until then, I'm just going to toss what I can into the offering plate. Love you guys. You keep me sane. Snarky. Thank you, Snarky.
Thank you, baby. We will catch it all, and it's right on time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We don't mind. Okay. We got Derek LW. And lastly, Felicity F. That's everybody. We appreciate y'all.
Even though I've been here for a while, still, I smile.
Hallelujah.
Smile. It's so hard to look up when you look down. I sure would hate to see you give up now. You look so much better when you smile.
Smile
for me.
All right, let's get into this 5-star reviews. We got 3 of them.
Yay!
Let's see, huh? First one is, they deserve the most exposure. This is from Brintelligence, who says, the talent this duo shows on a daily basis is unreal. They are the best podcasters, I'm sure of it. And they record live every day. I'm still not sure why they haven't got a radio deal or TV show deal. You know why? You know why? Because we are black.
I'm about to say, look at us. You can look at us and tell.
Mm-hmm.
I wear plaits in my hair.
Mm-hmm. I think we all, you know.
They're going to knock them Negroes.
I think we know why we have.
I mean, that's a sense of right from wrong. They know it's wrong to steal and burn down a CVS and an old person's home. I mean, come on.
Come on. So calling them thugs, just call them niggers. Just call them niggers.
That's why. Okay. oh, wait. They talk about black shit. Unapologetically. That's why. See, you knew. Stop playing and give the morals their things. All that things expeditiously. Thanks, management. Brentel. Thanks, Brent.
Thank you.
Janine1999 says, my fave podcast. I'm so guilty that my review is years late. I love to hear Rod and Karen speak on current issues and just shoot the breeze. Keep up the great work. I am rooting for you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And baby, you know what? The guilt is gone. You can come on down, sit in the front row with the rest of the saints. Turn around and judge everybody else. I'm judging you until you leave a 5-star review.
People say they hate new Christians. I say make them hate new donators and new mm-hmm. 5-star reviewers and new, mm-hmm. you know, all the people that's leaving us the new 5-star reviews. Y'all get to be the obnoxious, like, wow, mm-hmm. can't believe yeah. this.
Fold your arms, toot mm-hmm. your nose up, and like, I can't believe them sinners.
Y'all still listening to this secular music? Like, mm-hmm. show up and say it.
Judge. We allow you to judge away like you've been here for years. We don't care when you became a part of a club. You're a part of the club now.
Always listening. 5-star says, AKA AC _ to my friends. This is a long overdue review for the best podcast out there. Step 1, 5-star review. Step 2, going premium. Thank you both for all your hard work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope you made it to premium and I hope you're enjoying it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Lots of good stuff over there. Okay. Let's see. We got comments on the website. All right. Episode 2117 was called Burn It All Down. My mom was very inspired by this episode. She texted me.
Oh,
and
she
was like, yeah, I don't care about them people's businesses. They got insurance. Burn it all down. I said, yes, mama. That's what I'm talking about. And I said, and then burn the kids too and the families. And
no,
she was like, no, that's too far. I said, you coon. Okay. I can't believe you text me and you not woke as me. Okay.
No.
I'm burning all the children, the dogs too, the pets. Mm-mm. everyone can get it up in their house. Okay,
you've gone too far.
Wow, y'all not black for the black freedom. I see. I'm the only one. I'm not.
My third eye is closed.
I'm the only one on the podcast for black liberation, apparently, and the only one in my family that really truly believes in this.
I guess so.
That's sad to see. Yeah, she said, now I'm gonna have to kick your ass. So we'll see how that works out. Thank God she's practicing social distancing.
Oh, she can't get a hold of you.
And, you know, she had to whip it from 6 feet away. All right. This is the first time I appreciate the social distance. Anyway, we had comments. Miss Barnes 72 says, I forgot to leave my feedback for last week. My bad. I've never went live on my Facebook or Instagram because there's nothing that is interesting that I would go live for. Before going live, I wish to God that there would be a prompt that asks if you are sure if you want to go live. I also wish there was a filter for those that do go live on Facebook and Instagram. I will never forget my cousin went live on Facebook at the hotel where she caught her husband cheating. What? Shit. I need to follow your cousin. Everything from knocking on the door, her trying to get in to see the side piece that her husband had, to him shoving her out the room and slamming the door in her face. I'm like, no one wants to see this mess, but there it is for all of the internets to see. Don't let me get it on my high horse too much. I had the video saved for my sister to see, as she doesn't have Facebook. LOL.
Wow. So you go live and like, yeah, I'm live. What? And then it turns into a debacle.
Yeah, there's stuff that happens sometimes on Facebook and Twitter and shit where you be like, this is wrong. I shouldn't even be looking at this. All right, click save as, you know. But first, let me send it to a friend on text. And then we should both say we're wrong. We shouldn't even be looking at this. This is terrible. But yeah, that's crazy, man. And on live, it does have filters. I don't use them, but I think you can use some of the filters, like, you know, over your face, kind of like Snapchat and shit.
Yeah, and doesn't it ask you, like, when you click, it don't just go live, don't it prompt you? Like,
I mean, you have to, for me, I know you hit a button and then you know, turn it, like, you hit live on your post, on the place where you make a new post, then you have to hit live again. So, but I mean, it's just, look, the thing you got to realize, some people gonna hit it 12 times and still show you they husband cheating.
Yeah, because they don't care.
Yeah, they just don't care the way you care about it. Also, why did Arby's catch a stray? I don't see Arby's sponsoring homophobia. I don't see them making contributions to the Grand Cheetos campaign.
Because ain't nobody there.
They don't have a listen. When you have drug money, you can't have it on.
You
the
don't have
books.
No moral stances.
You can't have it on the books when you laundering drug money. What you trying to do in this community?
You don't care.
We know it's from the streets. I know that they probably using the heroin and crack money
right
now funding Arby's.
They don't care what you are, as long as the drugs boom.
Right. How you gonna try to act like, oh, they don't put it on the books? Oh, you telling me a place that has no customers but somehow had the money to buy Little Caesars doesn't have money on the books? Oh wow, so shocking. Ours is just sitting slicing roast beef, making sandwiches, minding this business, then it caught a stray from you, Rod. You, I must be with EVE on this and support Arby's. Go Arby's. EVE says, for the record, I hate Burger King, but Arby's is still delicious.
What, y'all agree?
I can't believe EVE hates Burger King and loves Arby's, but that should tell you a lot about how terrible Burger King is.
Mm-hmm.
People that love Arby's hate Burger King. What does that say about Burger King?
Says a lot.
Mm-mm-mm. Lakita says, laugh my ass off, these niggers are people. Rye got me hearing that shit whenever I see white people trying, then I laugh. I can't help it, but overall I think it's great. The poll was, has a white person reached out to check on you in these times? And so she talks about that. Per the poll, I don't have any white friends, unless you count colleagues who think we're friends. Isn't that every black person? Every black person with a job around white people have the motherfucker at work that think y'all cool, cause they don't know shit about you. Like,
it's always superficial.
All we talk about is traffic, sports, and the weather. We're not friends.
And if we talk about anything, we talk about your kids and your children. We don't talk about mine.
Yeah, we are not friends. Okay? As I told the chat, I was in need of a desk and found one on Craigslist. She had to know I was black. My name is Lakita. When I arrived with my best friend, she, the seller, a white woman, told us that she felt terribly about everything that's happening and asked if she could give us a hug. I gotta learn how to say no. She hugged us like we were off the war. not during the COVID, no thanks. Then told us she loved us. Nigga, you don't know me. When I went to pay her for the debt, she handed it back to me and told me buy something else with it. Her husband and daughter put the desk in a friend's truck and we left. Oh wait, hold up, I take everything back. You did right. You got a free desk. She was really sweet. Then when we went far enough away, we started cracking up. She did nothing wrong. It's just odd that suddenly our blackness is a get free shit from whites card. Like they suddenly realize we're people. She texted me later saying that she hoped she get to see me again. I thanked her again for the free desk. Nigga, I will never see you again unless you got some more free shit. I will never see you again. This is not a relationship now. My goodness. Y'all ever had a white people act too guilty? And then you'd be like, who did you call nigger? You know what I mean? We're like, you are
who
too.
Who did you spit on?
Like, what happened to bring about all of this? I didn't need you to give me a whole free desk. Like, what kind of fucking Confederate flag did you just take down before I walked in the door that made you feel like I need to cover my tracks?
Get him off the scent.
You know? I don't know. It's like, it's too, like you swung too, the pendulum swung too hard to our side. But I don't blame you. The white guilt is fantastic right now.
You better get it while you can.
It's like a great Groupon sale, you know?
Come on, everybody got a sale.
Flash sale till midnight. Racism, everything half off of blacks.
Come on.
You know, keep the pressure on them too. Y'all keep bringing up anything they did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm now, even though I think it's petty, I'm accepting a lot of these petty, you know, I don't appreciate this moments.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, because even Uber was like, if you're a black owned business, we are waiving your fees.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, welcome to the party, Uber Eat. Static says for the poll. The poll was, has a white person reached out to check on you in these times? Karen?
No.
Okay. The poll is yes, no, or I'm a white person who has reached out, or I'm a white person who hasn't reached out. Okay. 53% of our audience says yes, a white person has reached out to them in these uncertain times. Wow. That's a lot of blacks. Mm-hmm. Half of the audience? Wow. 40% say no, the whites have not reached out. Now that could just be that they know you well enough to know I don't need to be bothering this motherfucker, or it could mean that you don't have no white friends.
Right.
I am a white person who has reached out, 5%. Now it's not a lot of white people listening to our show, so that's actually pretty high. And 2%, I'm a white person who hasn't reached out, and I appreciate y'all keeping it real.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I don't want it. Like, do better without me. I don't need no fucking apology. Static says it was my boss and I was sort of caught off guard because I was expecting him to talk about work shit. He did seem genuine, and to me it's better than that he cares and supports the movement. I told him I appreciate him checking in, but at the same time I don't want to be the black guy at work that has to explain racism to everyone.
Right.
Just thinking about it makes me tired. So does all this double thinking. So Karen, not even from work did you get anyone reaching out in these uncertain times? Okay.
Mm-mm.
Catania says, I had a couple white and brown, although I know the poll didn't ask that. However, I thought it would be nice to add in. Friends reach out and I appreciate it. One of them, is one of my besties from when I worked in residence life. He has always had my back since the day we met, and he just wanted to make sure that I knew I could reach out to him if I needed to talk. I have a tendency to self-isolate when I'm feeling negative emotions, so it was really nice of him to reach out. Even in his reaching out, he kept putting my feelings in the forefront and asking if I needed to reschedule or FaceTime call due to needing more space or if I didn't feel like being social at the moment. Another white friend, he was my first kiss back in college. My parents didn't allow me to date middle and high school. Reached out, which surprised me since he voted for Trump. Oh man, what was that like? The first kiss, the dude vote for Trump. Like, oh, I can't imagine a head trip. I'll be like, I have let black people down with my kissing. Okay. This man here, it didn't even work. Okay. I feel like if you date a white person, they gotta be liberal for the rest of their life. Regardless, that's the rules. Once you go black, you don't go back politically, okay?
Oh Lord, I take that back. I did have two people check in on me.
Oh, okay.
But they were kind of like fans, you know, fans. They were just caught, you know, we're just checking on you, you know.
Then you're in the yes column.
Yeah, and I thought about that. I was like, no. Then I thought about that. I was like, yes, you did, Karen.
It counts.
It counts. And I talked to them, and I thanked them. you know, full action, you know, just checking in. And a lot of times they were like, you don't even have to respond back. Like, if you don't want to respond back, it's no obligation.
I be feeling bad because, like, I don't want to discourage them because some other black person might need it. But I be wanting to just tell them, like, I didn't need this. I'm good. Like, you don't need to do it. Like, honestly, don't do this.
it's not one of those things where it bothers or irritates me or anything like that. You know, I'm just like, it's almost like a shock or a surprise, because I know for me, I just kind of keep to myself. I don't really bother nobody or anything like that. So I was shocked and I was like, okay, you know, and it's one of those things to where, I'm just glad that there are good, truly good, kind hearted people out there. But it's different between those people and like somebody at work or somebody outside of that circle. I would look at them like they were crazy. Like, the hell you contacted?
It's just so much white guilt capital out there in the world right now. And I know we need to take advantage of it, but I don't like it. I don't like taking advantage of it for myself. It's just not my thing.
Oh, and that's fine. But particularly at work, because I'm like, hey, nigga, we at work. Like, here is not the time nor the place to talk about it. No, I'm good.
I've been keeping my distance during the text exchange. He stated that he thought that the media was making racism be a bigger thing than it really is in today's society. After citing a couple examples of systemic racism, redlining property taxes used to fund school district and police brutality, he seemed to understand how racism is more covert now. When I brought up how Meghan Markle was treated in the press when her and Prince Harry went public with their relationship, especially with the almost out of Compton headline, it was nice to hear from him. However, the exchange also confirmed that it was the best that we did not enter into serious romantic relationship. Well, not just that, but like, I would be a little mistrusting of that because I worry that you hit me up to soundboard your weird ass arguments off of, and in this exchange it ended up with you working, essentially, because now you're educating this man on now. I'm not saying if you didn't feel it was work, it's not work, but I'm just saying for me it would feel like work to then have to be like, well, now I'm talking about redlining and now I'm talking about this. You know, it's like the other version of the woke white person that I really don't fuck with is the, well, I mean, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, they're just race baiters, right? They're just making big deal out of nothing, and a lot of times they're woke in every other area. But I'm like, no, I have to do work. Right, to tell you that these men are great men who have dedicated their entire lives to social justice, and they're forefathers of the movements that you see now. So even when a black person disrespects them, much of that is through a lens of media attacks on them for 30, 40 years. So even black people don't really understand and know what kind of work they've done. And especially if you're indoctrinated into whiteness, you've learned to not like them, you know?
Right.
The same thing happened with me with Gloria Allred. Like, I learned to not like her without thinking about it. It was very subconscious. But then when I started reading up and seeing stuff about her, I was like, why the fuck was I told to roll my eyes whenever her name came up? She's been fighting for victims her whole fucking life.
Correct. And also I think for me, the people that did reach out to me, it wasn't like an educational thing. So which is completely different than somebody contacted you and they're actually wanting to pull information out of you. You know, it was a true, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, but like I said, I don't want you to feel uptight about like I'm not accusing white people of doing something. I don't care. I literally don't care. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't care if they do it. I don't care if they don't do it. I'm not one of the black people that need it.
Yeah, I was but fine different, either way.
Different
yeah.
black people need different shit. And I want to recognize that, because I don't want to make black people feel bad or weak because they felt like I need to be acknowledged from the white people in my life that they understand that I'm going through something different than them.
Right.
And it's because of my race. And I've seen people knocking folks for feeling that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to knock you. I don't share it, but that doesn't make me better than or anything. It's just different.
Right.
You know, like some of us process shit differently, and there's space for all of that. DD says, nary a white person has reached out to check on me, and that's solely because I don't talk to or keep white people as friends. Hashtag winning. Besides, white folks checking on me specifically would do nothing for me and my community as a whole. Yeah, I mean, I hear you. White people do buy drinks though. I do miss that. They are quick as fuck to buy the whole, just, I don't know why.
Yeah. There's like
nothing better than buying you a drink.
Yeah. And, I remember, I think it was Roderick's birthday, one of the places we love to go to, the dude who normally bartends when we used to go for lunch was bartending for dinner, and he didn't know it was Roger's birthday. We went. Now, he was so happy to see us, he actually gave us our drinks free.
Mm-hmm. They just love it. I don't know. Allegra says, nope, but mainly because the few white people that are close to me are pretty much ride or die, and they know better. When they do check on me, it's a normal ass Tuesday, and we haven't talked for a minute. Alicia says, okay, so y'all gonna stop hating on Burger King. Oh god, here we go. One of the Burger King truthers. What has Burger King ever done to you? The Whopper is the shit. Me and my son be tearing it up. Well, before I went on the diet, and the nuggets are actually good. I love Burger King, and the one by my house stay with the line. Humph. They stay with the line because they have terrible service. Burger King has to make everything the second you order it because they don't actually sell food. So there's never a need to pre-make a Whopper because, hey, it might be 3-4 hours before we sell the shit. So just only start cooking when the person orders it. I know I've waited 30 minutes to get my food before from Burger King.
We have waited before.
Like, you're not going to fool me, y'all. Y'all always trying to gaslight somebody into liking these shitty ass franchises. And I won't stand for it, okay? I just need y'all to be honest with yourselves. There's never a line for Arby's. There's just a long wait. There's a difference. There's never a line for Burger King. It's just a long wait. It's a difference. I've never seen a lobby full of people because, oh, like when Popeyes had the chicken sandwich, that's a lobby full of people because they can't keep up with the people that are ordering so much. Yeah. But there's never a line for Burger King because of that. It's a line because the service is shitty. Anyway, I hope you get paid, Alicia. Alicia Burger King. I know you work there.
Alicia King.
Mm-hmm. Alicia King out here selling burgers. I'm not gonna trick the black community into eating that stuff, Alicia. Not on my watch. Amira says, nope, and I don't want it. I want black people to reach out to me because we understand this pain. Why look for sympathy and validation from someone who has to learn that black people are murdered in Maine from a viral video? Many black people know that police brutality and other facets of white supremacy are real things that interfere with our lives, and a random person / friend asking, are you okay? How can I help? Is shallow and the most unhelpful for me. I personally think that many of the black people that are asking for white people to check up on them might live in spaces where they get little face-to-face interaction from other black people that can comfort them and validate their feelings, so they need to ask non-black people to do so, which is sad, and you end up talking to a brick wall that doesn't understand because they will never have this experience. I personally don't have white friends because I grew up learning black history in pan-African schools from grades K through 8, then American history in high school, so high key, I thought all the whites were the KKK adjacent until proven otherwise. LOL. I think people want to preserve relationships they have had in their lifetimes in which that now they are seeing might not serve them in the long run. It's a sad thing, but it's part of this progression that people want. Not everyone's going to progress with us. That's a very thoughtful response, Amir. I will say, it could be that people were more surrounded by more of whiteness, because, you know, it's kind of a privilege to do what you did, to be taught how you were taught. And
yes, most of us were not.
You know, especially that young K-8. There's a lot of people that just don't have that social circle around them to be insulated in times like this. And then also it reminds me of an article we covered a long time ago. It was about black kids at an Ivy League school and how they were dealing with racism, and they made a video, and the video was like, you know, all these microaggressions, you know, like, oh, are you from Africa? What part of Africa are you from? Or, you know, your name sounds weird. And it was all these things that, for me personally, because I haven't experienced too much of that, my first response is just laugh it off, like, what? These aren't even problems. This isn't even like real racism. Like, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, like someone putting their hands on you, someone calling you the N-word, things like this, right? But I remember either the same episode as we talked about it or the feedback show when we talked about it, I remember coming around and being like, wait, I'm tripping, okay? This is the fight that they have to fight where they are at. So what is the solution? They can't complain because they're black at an Ivy League school? That makes no sense. And if they're fight is not gonna look the similar to mine, like if their fight isn't take down this Confederate statue, but their fight is this teacher keeps referring to black kids by certain, you know, certain things or whatever, then that's cool. You know, if your school classmate thinks it's funny to say you're one of the good ones and you want to tell them that that's not okay, who the fuck am I to be like, but that's not a real problem? It's a real problem for you. So I say that to say, if people have a lot of white folks in their lives and they feeling like disrespected, or they're feeling like these white people aren't stepping up enough, or they're not saying enough, that's the fight they have to fight. And I can see why they would be like, yeah, say something or I'm not fucking with you. So reach out to me. And I also want to see this on your social media and in your life, that you support my life.
Yeah. And also I think for a lot of people, their proximity to whiteness, these things happen to them. These things happen to everybody kind of across the board,
right?
But these things happen to them on a very consistent basis. And the that shit, which, you know, a lot of people be like, that's quote unquote not a big deal, everybody has to deal with that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But the sad part is that most people who's dealt with it, you know, and I'm not complaining, but like, I deal with deeper shit. It's sad that we just deal with it. They're like, no, I'm not gonna deal with it, and I'm address it. Because most white people do that shit.
Right.
Those small micro pinpointing, you can't tie it down, it's quote unquote nebulous, it hadn't really formed. They do that shit. Right. And in order, because that small shit turns into the larger shit. And mm-hmm. So you have to fix the small things and nip it in the bud before it becomes something big. Right. And I know if I had a closer proximity to whiteness, I would probably feel the same way.
Right. So yeah, but I can understand. Sean says, I'm a white guy and I checked on in for the pandemic, but not for this. Those that I care for know I'm here if they need me. I feel that me calling at this time would be more of a burden than a comfort. Yeah, only you know the people in your life, you know. Brittany M says, people from elementary school are checking in on me. And yeah, that's the ones that are weird to me. It's like, I don't talk to you in the first place. I would never expect you to do something, you know.
Yeah. And that's the thing, I don't want an expectation.
Right. Also, this girl from grad school that my roommate's best friend was friends with, I kind of knew her, but I kind of wonder if she is getting us confused, lol. It's been weird. Yeah. Layla says, two snaps and a twist. I hate this. Channeling my inner men on film protesting tees. Don't check on me, check on your people, because I'm waiting on a Karen to approach me. There was a situation here, well, in South Holland, Illinois, nothing but blacks in this suburb. The fuck she thought? And it's an Instagram. I appreciate the allyism. I just hope it's sincere, not done because it's trending. Yeah, I think a lot of this stuff we're seeing right now is because it's just a moment, and this is people hopping on the bandwagon, and we'll see what remains afterwards. That's why I'm just encouraging black people to seize everything they can get now, because I don't expect this goodwill to last forever. And when it's gone, it's gone. So hopefully, if you wanted that promotion, if a motherfucker called you the N-word in third grade, get they ass now.
You better.
Miss Barnes says, oh my god, my former manager had a how are you doing meeting with all of the black folks in this store. While some of my friends are okay with it, others were like, what the fuck is this pretend hippie doing? It's a lot. And the sad part is that there's no formal way to do this. Me, on the other hand, I have reached out to my friends of color to ask how they are doing, and we are all tired, we are all beat up from life and just in need of a church hug. Yeah, it's just an interesting time, man.
And everybody kind of deals with different. It's one of those things where there's no protocol for white people to handle this, so they handle it all types of ways, some appropriate, some not appropriate. And the problem is, every black person is different. So for a lot of people, they were like, okay, I'm glad you check, I'm glad you care. For some people, they were like, the fuck is this? I'm at work.
They're getting
this.
A lot of mixed information.
Right, because we're all different.
Right, so this is kind of weird. Hold on. All right. The next episode was 2118. It was Black Lives Matter. We're joined by comedian, actor Roy Wood Jr. Not a lot of comments. I always feel weird about these episodes because we get a good guest. Everyone's going crazy on Twitter. They love it. Everyone's in our Facebook. Oh, this is the best. Look, but then when I go to the comments, nobody ever says anything. I'm always like,
because they enjoyed it. Like, I think for me, I don't know. I'm like, is, as long as it is expressed, you know, like, so for me, if you express it online, a lot of people go, well, I didn't really disagree, or there was nothing that I needed to add to the conversation. So
yeah, this is not me knocking the audience or anything. It's just always weird to me. Anytime we have a really good guest and I think for like, oh, these conversations are so great. You know, you would think it would be the opposite. Everyone would want to get in on the conversation, but it's always this way where people are like, I loved it. Anyway, moving to the next episode. it's almost like when we don't have a guest, the audience fills herself in as the guest. And
they
then
do.
When we do have a guest, they're like, well, everything was said, you know?
Yeah, you had a guest. I don't need to add to the conversation.
D. Ramsey says, 5 stars. Listen to you guys, Roy Wood Jr. If Drew Brees left his wife for Regina King, I would fix his plate and Regina's. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, he might be able to get to the cookout. Well, now he knows what he needs to do. The poll was, do you think Kaepernick will ever be an NFL quarterback again? Yes or never? Kern?
Never.
83% of the black audience agrees with Karen. He will never be a quarterback again. 17% say yes. And I currently am in the 17%, guys. I think he can be a quarterback again.
They're going to have to prove me wrong.
Never. I know. You blacks need to protect yourselves in case you're wrong. I mean, I could easily be wrong. I get it. I'm not, you know, I'm not flawless, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just feeling a little bit more hopeful lately. Seeing all these whites in the streets trying to fight for our rights and shit. You know, it's working on me too, y'all. They put the Black Lives Matter on the thing. They taking Confederate signs down from the motherfucking NASCAR.
Come on.
I'm like, why can't he have a job?
Kicking over statues.
Maybe I was wrong. Ann says, I think he will come back for one season and leave with a big emotional send off. Like a retirement tour. Or will he know? That's the thing. Will he know he about to get a send off?
Will he know?
Oh man, you laugh because it's terrible. Layla says, I don't think so. If he's still making a stink about it, it'll probably be because of the principality of it. He got his settlement. He donated his million like he said he was going to do. I'm sure he ain't losing no sleep. To me, I hope he is feeling like the NFL is that girl he's been trying to smash for 5 years, and then when she finally decided to fuck, he ain't as excited and just do it. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we're now at a point where you can't be like, it's because he kneeling, because all these niggas gonna be kneeling when they get back. It's gonna be the opposite. Nigga, you ain't kneeling
with they fisting in everything.
Episode 2119 was Black Supremacist. Ann says, so I heard your comments about my Burger King choices. And you have to stop, okay? It's the amount of Burger King love. This is not a Burger King podcast. They don't sponsor us. All right, it's enough. It is enough. You like microwave burgers, fine. So I heard your comments about my Burger King choices last week. Just wanted to add that I went there for the price and the quick service too. There was a Subway that I also could walk to, but the sale just took longer to make. I know that because it doesn't make a difference, but I had to share this because I only bring my lunch from home now. Yes, I still go to work these days. No work from home for me. Oh, you were just trying to acquit yourself. Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay. All right. I hear you. The poll is, have you ever stabbed anyone at work? Yes, no, or I plead the fifth. Karen?
No.
All right. 84% of our audience have not stabbed anyone at work. 84%.
What happened to the other percentage? They out here stabbing people?
11% plead the fifth. Okay, they are not gonna tell, they will not confirm nor deny it, but keep in mind, pleading the fifth is an admission of guilt, essentially in the court of law, but okay, I see you, player. And 5% say yes, they have stabbed somebody at work.
I hope it was by accident.
Cheyenne says yes, but only in a playful way. That doesn't count, Cheyenne. I'm talking real stabs. Okay, so that's one less vote for yes. Kim says, I never stabbed anyone, but in my head, I've shot a few on many occasions, either in my head or on the spot where a heart should reside, but obviously doesn't. Well, Kim, you might want to holler at some therapist or something. Is this how workplace shooting start? Hopefully you're on looking for a different job. I don't want you to have to kill nobody.
I don't need
to
work from home, so you don't have to deal with that.
Okay, Kim, we care about you over here at the Blackout Tips. We don't want to see nothing happening.
We want you to be safe, baby.
Mm-mm. Blue Cat says yes with my tongue. First of all, if you saw the yes in this poll, you can go straight to hell, Blue Cat. This is science. You know I'm doing a scientific study about people being stabbed with sharp objects like knives and scissors and swords and shit, and your tongue is not one of those things. Kim Doc says stab someone else. No, nearly stabbed myself on multiple occasions, more times than I can count. Your heart starts beating out your chest when any near accident or safety issue in the chemistry lab. Even if you're careful, you can get injured. Wait, what? Who the fuck is stabbing people at a chemistry lab? Why? I thought you was gonna be like, I work in the fucking like psychiatric ward or some shit, and the people get a hold of things.
I'm pretty sure they deal with some, I guess, some sharp shit.
Nearly stabbed myself. I know what you mean. I was nearly stabbed myself. She means I like maybe with a needle or something. I've nearly stabbed myself with some fucking chemicals or some shit and turned to the Hulk or Spider-Man.
Right.
Okay. All right. I feel you on that. All right, my bad. I get a little defensive about my pose. I'm sorry, y'all. Why is Terry Crews so toxic? What did black women ever do to him? I hope Gabby has NBC unload the Brinks truck for ass trash. I don't know what happened with Terry, man. I don't know. I mean, honestly, man, most black men, period, are not prepared to be in that black Twitter sphere of feminism that was supporting him. And I would feel like almost any black dude would eventually be very disappointing to the black women that support him, because I mean, it's, you're still a black dude. You still have a lot of privilege within that space. And, the support is very rarely reciprocal. And in many cases, it can't truly ever be reciprocated, in a 100% way. So a lot of these dudes would have let y'all down even if they didn't intend to. And I don't think he intended to let black women down, but that's what happened. That being said, there's just also the fact that the dude is like, he really was not supposed to be put on that pedestal. In a weird way, it's like him and the black women on Twitter that were really supportive of him, and a lot of the white women too, by the way, that were really supportive of him, kind of needed each other in a weird way. It's like they needed a man to be like, if it can happen to him, will y'all stop saying it's our fault for what we wear and where we go and shit? They did it to this dude in public at a party, and he really couldn't do shit without losing his whole career. Great example. And of course, you know, he was glommed onto it because he was not being supported by black men, and definitely not his white male friends, because many of them stopped fucking with him over this because the person he was suing was a powerful agent and shit. So he needed someone to have his back, and a lot of time in a way black women specifically filled that void. And then it made it okay for his white woman co-workers and stuff like that to start filling that void too. But that being said, had he done any real examination and work of himself? Has he, you know, does he even know much about the belief system of people that support him? Like, I know he's a very Christian man. Like, has he examined his Christian beliefs and how that shit plays with the people that support him? You know, when you start, you know, I know he's very into male and female, make the baby, and you need the man, and black fathers and black men and stuff, and that doesn't play well with those people.
Mm-mm.
You know, I feel empathy for a lot of people, but I think a lot of these people get in over their heads hopping in this internet shit without reading anything, without studying anybody. They just fucking just welcome the support. Like, you don't actually go here. Like, you might want to like read some of these links they send to you rather than just retweet and be like, thanks, sister. You know? And I think that's what fucked everything up for him. It went to his head, and then this is who he really is, you know? Because I'm sure in the circles he runs in, that black supremacist shit is deep. It's as deep as his multivitamins, where the man gives vitamins and the woman gives vitamins. It's deep as hell in them circles. But Twitter ain't them circles. That shit ain't deep at all.
No.
Miss Barnes says, in my head, many a motherfucker has bit the dust in one form or another. My shit list stays upgraded every month. Well, don't stab nobody at work, okay? We just want the best for y'all. I don't want none of y'all have to go to prison.
Right.
But yeah. And I don't even know that it's a black woman that hurt Terry Crews. That's the other thing. I think he just might not be a supportive dude in the way that people thought he would be.
Right.
You know, a lot of black men take advantage of that, take it for granted. Like, black women gonna support me no matter what I do. So anyway, you know, and then they just go out and live their lives without black women in mind, you know. And meanwhile, we see what happens the other way. Like, with black women, if they start expressing shit that doesn't sound supportive of black men, they get accused of being like fucking over the whole black community, you know. So it's just a lot of privilege at play, and shit was moving way too fast for a dude like that. Episode 2120 was Refund the Police. We got some comments. B-Star says, there has to be audio of black people grilling that you can play before the cookout segment. Love the show. I'm sure there is somewhere, but, you know, I just like playing the music, you know? Mm-hmm. Sarah says, I found this episode really impactful, especially your conversation about forgiveness. The momentum to release nonviolent drug offenders, but the majority of prisons are charged with violent. Yes, there is momentum to release nonviolent drug offenders. They talk about this in the book as well, in Lock It Up Our Own. But the majority of prisoners are charged with a violent crime, sometimes through the wonkiness of the definition of violence. Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can commit a crime that's actually nonviolent, but if you're a felon with a gun on you, that shit counts as violent. You know, stuff like that. If you point a pistol at somebody, that counts as violence. That's assault. So like, you know, some of this stuff that you go, this is a nonviolent, technically they are a nonviolent offender. They didn't shoot anybody. They didn't whatever, right. But the law says that's a violent offense. So you get that extra period of crime.
Yes.
And then when the leniency comes through the criminal justice system, they skip over you, even though you've never actually harmed anyone with any physical violence.
Right.
If we want real prison reform, that would mean shorter sentences for violent offenders. Yeah, and see, this is the thing. They skip past this stuff because no one wants to talk about the ickiness of, we're going to have a more lenient thing that might mean that a man who is stalking someone is back on the streets even faster than they are now. You know, it might, you know, there might be people who don't buy into this system the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, tenth time. Just the same way it happens now. Like, people aren't going to just change overnight. They're talking about a long-term commitment.
Yes.
And I think because they don't want to say these icky parts in a lot of cases, that they then turn people off because people want answers.
Yes.
And I think you're also going to lose momentum, because even if you can implement these things and you have people out here thinking they're going to get quick solutions and the system's going to be fixed, when they run into problems in the new systems, they're just going to be like, well, I want the old system back. Fuck this shit.
Because I know it worked.
Right. Well, not even that it worked. It didn't really work.
No, it didn't.
It's broken.
I know how it works.
But they understood how, yes, and why, and they will run back for the terrible comfort of something horrible than for the icky uncertainness of something new, especially something new that you're not really teaching them shit about. Like, when they ask a question, you just shame them for asking a question. When they go, well, what about this specific scenario? And the only thing you can say is, I'm concerned about that too. That's not good enough for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I don't give a fuck. You didn't answer my question.
Right. And, you know, they're not stupid. People aren't stupid. They're going to pick up on this. So I think you might have to tell them the tough answer of, we don't know. Or, you know what? This person might really be on the streets and be able to kill people. They, you know, in our new world, we're going to hope that investing in schools and changes a lot of people and reformat it. But yeah, we don't really necessarily have a plan for the killers and the rapists. Maybe we'll figure it out as we go. Maybe we'll come up with something new. We don't know.
Right. And they get out on the streets a lot of times quick anyway.
Yeah. And it's weird because they're willing to sacrifice their argument on this purity moral stance over the really a select few individuals who are the, like, I refuse to participate in society without abusing other people. They're like, they were gonna lose their entire fucking footing of the argument just because of them. It's stupid to me. Just sacrifice them then. Like, sometimes you have to be like, look, that kind of nigga has to go to jail. I don't have a better solution than that.
They have to be separated from society.
And in our world, jail won't look like the jail it is now. So hopefully that version of jail might help them better than the jails we have now. Something like that would be
that
much
is understandable. I will roll with you if you give me that answer. But this hemming and this hoeing, this I'm concerned about rape too. Okay, bitch, answer the question.
But then you lose the kind of the higher moral ground of, in my world, there is no jail and everyone just gets along and we all drink gummy bear juice and we skip. Like, you lose that argument. But I think that's also because a lot of these arguments are happening online and they're happening in theoretical spaces. And, you know, you don't need to have a solution in theory. You can just kind of be like, whatever it is, imagine anything.
And
it's like, I'm just trying to help. That answer right there is not going to get people on board.
No, because I live in reality. I'm not trying to imagine. I want answers.
You know, like, it's not, you know, the idea is that the system will work better. I think everyone can agree this, we can find a better system. I don't think you're going to find everybody that agrees with, you know, that this solution will work for everyone.
Right, because no matter what you put in place, it does not work for everyone.
Yeah, and at the core of this is a society that has to be willing to forgive, which is something that everyone apparently it thinks is whack right now.
Come on.
You know what? I'm not saying this to be trolling. I'm not saying this to be inflammatory, but I fucking mean it. You want to know what prison reform, sentencing reform, or abolition of prison, abolition of this punitive justice system that's about punishing people? You want to know what it looks like? It looks like hugging Amber Geiger in court.
Mm-hmm. And people lost their motherfucking minds.
It looks like that. That's what it looks like. It looks like a system that sees people as human enough to say, you did a thing that was terrible, but we don't believe that makes you terrible or terrible forever.
Right.
And we believe in your rehabilitation. And right now, as a black person, I feel jealous of the fact that she gets to be seen as human. And in a better system, everyone gets to be seen as human. But it doesn't, the thing is, it would not stop for just us.
And that's where people don't understand. It will go against racist people too, y'all. I hope y'all realize that this is not like, an only black thing.
Right. Like, it's not punitive for the cops but not punitive for the people that sell drugs. It's going to be not punitive for everyone in the system. It's going to be not punitive for Dylan Roof.
Right.
It's going to be not punitive. So are we able to let that go? Will we be able to say, yes, they sentenced Amber Geiger, but only to 2 years, or she's just out in the community doing community service? Because the truth of the matter is, she is very unlikely to commit a crime like that again, right? Are we willing to say, because, hey, look, in this system, my cousin that robbed a bank comes home a lot faster, and Amber Geiger comes home a lot faster.
Right.
I don't know that that's real. I think people, what we feel now is that a system is on the necks of black people, so we want it off the necks.
Right.
But I don't know if we feel like we want it off the necks of everybody, and I would like to see that completely fleshed out. Let's find out, you know? I feel I've come to peace with that. Yeah, if we want real prison reform, that will mean shorter sentences for violent offenders. I feel I have to come to peace with that, especially when you're the person, when the person is under 25. Though I do still bristle at the thought of forgiving sexual offenders. Thank you very much for your well thought out conversation. Yeah. And I've read books about that too. Conflict is not abuse. Locking up our own, of course. But you're talking about people needing to, we need to, as a society, see that a person that is a pedophile or a serial sexual offender is still a human being that is sick, but doesn't need to be in prison and needs to be rehabilitated and should be on the same streets that we are and not necessarily be restricted too punitively. I don't know that the world's that radical. I don't know that people are that radical. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they hate the police that much.
Right.
I don't know that they hate prison that much, as fucked up as prison and police are.
Correct.
So the question becomes, how do you get them on your side? And I'm like, it's not going to come from just laughing at them and saying, mm-hmm. why would you even ask that question, you stupid? You think I'm not concerned about pedophiles? And it just blah, 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 word salad. You ain't about to win nobody over with that.
Mm-mm. particularly people that are listening to your words, because words mean things. And I've actually been very open, and I've actually been listening to all these conversations with all these new words and terminology, and I've been trying to figure out. And every time we get down to the nitty gritty of it, I get a yada 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 yada, and I get infuriated, because I was like, well, you know, you're not answering any of the questions that are relevant.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think what we'll find out in the next however long that this conversation is going, I think I'm not afraid of it personally, but I understand people's fear of it. But I think the truth is, we're gonna find out that what a lot of black people actually want from the criminal justice system is to treat us the way they treat white people.
Correct.
And I don't mean that in the pejorative, like, because we just want white supremacy for ourselves. I don't mean it like that. I just mean that they really are like, I want you to do the job that you do for white people.
That's it.
They asked Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez what defund the police looks like on our Instagram, and she said it looks like a suburb. And people go, well, what does that mean? And she's like, less police presence. They're there to protect and serve. They're doing their jobs in the community. They're not there to lock people up, pulling over people every 5 seconds. Like, it just looks like what we already have a lot of places. And you don't need a fucking tank to do that. You don't need a lot of money to do that. You don't need 45 officers showing up to do that. You know, there's no knock warrants in fucking Ballantyne. I know y'all ain't from here, so that makes no reference. But fill in your own part of your city that the people with some money and white people live. It's not, they don't no knock warrant Ballantyne. You know what I mean? When they do, they don't kill anybody. They don't shoot up the place. So that's something that people could understand.
Yes,
that's something they could get behind. You know, that's why half this country doesn't, more than half this country doesn't think police are quote unquote bad. It's because they aren't bad to everybody.
Mm-mm.
You know, it's like a man that treats you fine, but then you find out he's fucked up towards other people, right? That's what white people are doing right now, where they're like, you know, Randy, you know, he used to be a pimp. It's like, what, Randy? No, we've been dating for 3 years. It's like, here's his Facebook. This nigga be pimping. I don't know what to tell you. He's slapping women. Here's him, you know, in a car in a Cadillac with some high heel fish platform shoes. This nigga is a pimp, and it's hard for white people to even grasp, because they like, but they don't pimp me. That's the discussion right now. And so I think what people are saying is, do away with the pimp, right? like do away, kill Randy is what everybody's saying. And I think what's going to happen is, we're never going to kill Randy. That's my belief. I think America will always hold on to policing and all this shit, prison. But I do think what they're hoping for is like, well, can you get Randy to treat everybody the way he treats you?
And I'll, for me personally, because I am fine with that.
Yeah.
I understand that there's a purpose for it, for police officers. In my mind, all I ask is that I'm able to ride around without fitting the description. All I ask is that if I get pulled over for a violation, I blink my eyes and there's 45 people around me. That's all I ask. And the thing is, for most black people, that's all they ask. Most black people don't want this radical change. You do have people that do, but most people don't want this radical change, because if you have this radical change, then you have questions is, what do you do without this system? And what do you do when people decide fuck it, because there's no system in place?
The problem becomes, and this is, you know, this is where I kind of understand and side with the abolitionists and the defund the police. I mean, I definitely stand with defund the police, period. But what if Randy can't, he's incapable of treating everybody the way he treats you?
Right.
And that's what we're seeing. Think about what we're seeing right now. Police are under more scrutiny than ever. Everything is filmed. We see every fucking thing now. Body cameras, every restaurant got some type of CCTV, every person has a fucking phone in their pocket that can broadcast to the world, and they're still beating protesters and they're still killing black people. Another one got killed in Atlanta today at a Wendy's or some restaurant drive-through, and it was caught on camera. The police chief in Atlanta, she resigned today. They know they're being watched. They just pulled two kids out of a in a college out of a car and four officers got in trouble and all this stuff. What if they can't stop? You see what I'm saying? So that's why people are like, abolition, fuck them, start over, like none, imagine brand new solutions. That's why people are definitely like, defund. That's where it's coming from. But I think everything you said was right, is that most people are not there yet.
Mm-mm. And most you have to get me there. Like right. I can change. I'll just say I can change, but you got to get me there. Right. You can't turn around and be like, defund. And I'm like, okay, if a crime happens, then fuck what?
Right.
Not
right.
To be funny. I don't give a fuck about your board or your community. Who's going to enforce these laws? Who's going to say, if you do this, somebody needs to be able to come in and make it go forward. It can't be like my meemaw and them. And if somebody's be like, fuck your meemaw and them, I got guns, what are you going to do? These are valid questions to me.
Yeah, and so I feel like, look, you the only thing you can do is try to educate people. It's not gonna come from yelling at them. It's not gonna come from trying to make them feel stupid about the shit.
Right.
Especially if your whole point is I'm saving the community, then you got to get the community on board. If not, then you're gonna find out what the community really wants. It's not what you telling everybody they want.
Mm-mm.
So hopefully we'll see, man. Like I said, this is a great time of change. I'm very optimistic. I'm very hopeful. I know Minneapolis is doing some things right now that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. So, you know, yeah. I hope everyone does surprise me and we find some different solutions, because I know for a fact this shit ain't working.
And I agree. And I lean more towards defund and redistributing the money. That part I can, my mind can wrap around that concept.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I you know, it's weird you have to put a caveat between this shit, but you know, I think it's kind of understood that most people understand there's a function of policing that, you know, theoretically works and is needed.
Mm-hmm.
But in execution, it's fucking terrible.
Correct.
So what, you know, so what am I gonna do, defend your terrible job? I'm not.
Mm-mm.
You know, I didn't kill no black people. I'm not about to fucking hop in front of this bullet for you. Not none of these puns and trying to be funny, they just sound that way. But yeah, I'm not doing any of that for you. Like, y'all the ones that can't stop killing us. So fuck I look like defending your shit.
Right. And the thing is, somebody said reallocate. I think when you say defund, a lot of people bristle up. I think language means things. If they was like, we want to reallocate, a lot of people are like, okay, yeah, I understand.
Well, I was talking to Randolph Terrace today and the other guys at Three Gone, Andy and Tim. And my thing was like, why do, like, people always go, liberals are terrible at, you know, coming up with these slogans and these simple ideas to sell to everybody and nobody can understand it, and you know, they always fucked up. So they come up with defund the police and abolish the police, two pretty simple things. And then when you start examining them, almost neither of them are solidly defined as one thing, right? And the thing with people on the left is that they're thinkers.
Yes.
Unlike the people on the right who are so evil and vile, they push all thought aside.
Yes.
Because you know what they didn't ask what this means? Defund Planned Parenthood. They don't care what it means.
Mm-mm.
They know that it hurts Planned Parenthood, and Planned Parenthood is the enemy to them.
Right.
So they support defunding Planned Parenthood, period. They don't give a fuck. Well, they didn't go, don't you mean abolish? They just said, oh, yeah, we'll do that. And we'll figure out what it means on the way. But we hashtag defund Planned Parenthood. What liberal people, they're like, what does defund mean? Da, da, da. And so instead of them getting into like, well, this is what it means, this is how we're gonna go about it, they start going, you stupid motherfucker, you must love the police or whatever. And it's like a big ass argument, and it's everything except what the fuck it started out as,
right?
And even within that context, you got a lot of people being like, well, defunding looks like this to me, defunding looks like that to me. And then some other asshole jumps off the top rope and goes, fuck you, that's not what we want abolition. Abolish the police. Well, what does that mean? Well, about abolition looks like this, and we can start building a new system. And another person says, no, when I say abolition, I mean abolition. Ain't no new system. Fuck the police, fuck all this shit, we could do it ourselves, you know. And so you have all this fighting over here, but maybe the truth is there are no three word slogans that can define something as complicated,
right? It's as a complex thing,
how society deals with infractions upon the personhood of other people. How we deal with that shit is not something that should be on a poster.
Mm-mm.
Like, it might just need to be smart people sitting in a room figuring this shit out, communities meeting, figuring this shit out. Maybe it's not gonna be something that goes on a goddamn t-shirt, you know? And I think that's the stuff that people get exhausted by, but it's like, that's the truth. It's gonna be a lot of talking and a bunch of figuring shit out on the fly. It's not gonna be as simple as it is now,
because it ain't pretty. A lot of the marches and a lot of the protests that a lot of the woke people ooh and ah and drool over, that shit was messy. I hope people didn't think that they just came up with this shit overnight and boycotted for months and sometimes years. They fought, they fell out, everybody had ideas, they scratched, they started over again. Like, this is a part of the process.
All right, we had a poll. The poll was, white people washing black feet for Black Lives Matter. Yes, no, or I don't care either way. Karen?
I don't care.
All right, 35% of the audience does not care either way. I think I'm in the 35% too. Yes, 12% say yes, washing them feet now. I need that. And 53% say no, they did not like that. Let's see, Rebecca says, all the episodes you put out this week were on point. The Intercept's latest podcast goes into quite a bit of depth about the history about prison abolition and police reform, and it's hosted by our favorite from Uncivil, Chinjirai, I'm gonna fuck this name up.
Mm-hmm.
Kamaika.
I love Uncivil.
Me too. That dude, he'd be taking it to him. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck that show take us so long to come back?
Right? I can't wait for that show to come back.
Worth the listen. Earlier in the week, Rod, you were talking about how you don't feel creative during this time. Boy, do I feel you there. I find myself playing more video games than ever to escape this hell we're living in, rather than my creative hobby of beating. Oh, what games you playing? Oh, wait, you can't answer that. Karen, the best use I found for a Crown Royal bag is for my monthly products when I'm on the go. I started using bags in this manner when I was a bartender years ago. Seems men can't handle seeing feminine products when drunk, and since my boss wouldn't let us keep our purses and bags behind the bar with us, I had to resort to something inconspicuous and keep it in my tip jar. As a woman whose mother did not bless her with light monthlies, I can attest it holds all the products. Anyway, great shows this week, you too. Thank you for all your wonderful food for thought. Sincerely, Rebecca M. Thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, and shit like that make you mad, because only a man will make a rule. You can't bring your purse up here. Bitch, you don't carry one. What the fuck you talking about?
You don't have periods, sir. Shut
right?
the fuck up. Bree says, why would I trust a white person to wash my feet when they don't wash their own? Brooklyn Shoebay says, listen, white people out here doing way too much. I don't want them washing my feet. I don't want no apologies. I don't want their gifts. I don't want their shame. I don't want them wearing slave chains to feel my pain. I want them to check their racist friends. I want them to vote and vote in our best interest. I want them to use their privilege to change the world, be anti-racist like they love rescuing dogs, use their caring power to recognize and challenge systemic racism, talk to the manager of racism. You know, LOL, Karens will get shit done. You get what I'm saying? Words without action is just words. Pass me on by with that shit. Once I did attend a Thursday church service the day before Good Friday, we washed each other's feet. Jesus was the Son of God and was his disciples' teacher, and he washed their feet. It was very humbling to have a pastor wash my feet. I understand the sentiment of those white people, but that's not the action we need. Now, I will say this. We don't know that they didn't do more than that. It looked like they were marching and have been marching for some things. So I don't want to, you know, as someone that saw the clip as well, I don't want to demagogue them into, they ain't do shit. Like, they just washing feet thinking it's over. They could have then went out there and ripped down a Confederate statue.
That's true. And I do have a question. And I don't know. This might be a sexist question. I don't know. But I'm going to ask you, because I see somebody say in the chat, when did you become comfortable, or did it ever bother you about feminine products? Because you know how some men just be act like feminine products is the worst fucking thing in the whole wide world, and oh my god, you, that's nasty.
Me personally,
yes.
I don't think I ever had a thing about it.
I don't think you did either. Okay.
You know, but look, man, I say this all the time. I don't try to say this shit on some, I'm such a good guy, okay? I'm a man that's just, I understand where it's coming from, ladies. Like, that's not, I don't think that shit at all. I just kind of was nerdy and aloof, and I just kind of, you know, read a lot and lucked out on not being with the wave. I think it was more me being not cool.
Okay.
Because I think when you have a lot of people around, you kind of like learn certain shit is cool and okay, and I think I was a sensitive little boy and shit, so I just didn't learn. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I didn't.
No. Yeah. It's precious, because you know a lot of little boys don't have that luxury.
So I don't think I was into the circles of like, ugh, pussy, you know, and then you know, and the vaginas, menstruation. No, who wants to deal with all that? And I don't think I was in the circles of like, you know, jack off jokes and all this type of shit. You know, just. It was just, I just think that's it. I think I was just socialized a little bit differently because I was just asthmatic and nerdy. I think if I would have been able to kick it with the other dudes at that time and been out there all the time, I probably would have picked up a lot of that shit just as much as any other dude picks up that shit, right. You know? So I have a little bit of like fairness thing in me. I don't know if that's the Libra talking or what, but you know, I'm big on fairness. I'm big on like, well, if you say it this way, you got to say it that way and all that kind of shit. So that probably, is another reason I didn't pick that up, but I don't know. And then I've really never been in a situation where like I've had to do much about, tampons and whatever stuff. You know what I mean? So I don't even think you've ever sent me to the store by myself for that. Mm-mm. So I don't even.
The most time we go shopping.
We go together. Yeah. Right. But I mean, not that I would be against it. I mean, I probably have to hit you up and be like, let me just make sure I'm getting the right thing.
Right brand. Yes.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I just ain't had that. Haven't had that experience. You know, like you was the one that thought the appearance is gross and shit. Not me. So.
and it's not that grows is or anything like that. I think when we were talking about the period parties, talking about with Layla, because I was thinking about with Layla and things like that. I just think it was my own personal hang-ups with just the process and how it was introduced to me and things like that. Not the products themselves or anything like that.
Yeah, you were, I'm sure, socialized into that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So if you have people that, I don't know, socialize you into shit. A lot of, you gotta have empathy for people, because a lot of stuff, there's a point where your baggage is your baggage, okay? Don't get me wrong. But a lot of the baggage, it was handed to you, and then you start carrying it because someone else told you that's what you were supposed to do. And, you know, there's a lot of shit that, at least for me, I'm just like, I don't want to do the shit that you think I'm supposed to do. Like, you look at me and see me a certain way, that might not be how I see myself, and I don't want to do the things just because everybody else is doing them, you know? So, to me, it was never like, a tampon? What am I gonna do with this? Like, whatever.
Get that pad out of here.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a bunch of other shit that I do believe in and I'll socialize into, so whatever. Kim Doc says, fuck the feet washing, fuck the kneeling, stop kneeling. It's disrespectful and a disgrace. The kneeling thing is so weird, because on the one hand, it's solidarity with Kaepernick, and it is the chosen form of protest that he went with. But on the other hand, that's how George Floyd got killed. So it's like this. I thought these protests was for him. It's a lot going on at once. I feel sorry for every person trying to make a statement, because there ain't no right statements out there. George Floyd died under a knee. What is you taking a knee and looking solemn for the black community do? Especially when you're gonna pepper spray a tear gas them anyway. Fucking disgusting and ridiculous. Yeah, I'm more upset about that last part. Like, y'all niggas tear gassing us anyway. Stop dancing the Macarena with us. Out here motherfucking unholstering the pepper spray. Hey, Macarena. Okay, sun just went down, guys.
Shaking a can.
Right. Sun just went down, guys. Let's go ahead and light them up, boys. Like, get out of here. I voted yes, Miss Barnes says, because it's hysterical and I'm about all the jokes of life writing themselves. Since I'm Catholic, I will insist that a reverend and priest bless the bottle of Pinot Grigio I'm bringing before I drink it. Amen. Listen, cash in while you can. This white guilt is not lasting forever.
Mm-mm.
So I ain't mad at y'all. All right. Gotta go to the next segment. All right, we do have some voicemails this week. 704-557-0186 is the voicemail line. 2 minutes or less or you will get cut off.
Hi, Ron and Karen. It's Allegra. I am 28 minutes into your Black Supremacist episode, and you're playing back the first person the white woman who was disgusted. And all I could hear was that chick's voice, the one, the clip you guys play for, this is ridiculous. What the crap. That's what I kept hearing.
That's my girl.
It was this woman talking about. It's not funny, but it's also kind of funny. Talking about how she's, you know, disgusted by the actions of the police. And LAPD, I mean, all PD, let's just be real. But LAPD, because I'm from LA, whew, that history, that Rodney King business is my first introduction, like visible introduction to police brutality. Not to say that I didn't know it existed, just to say that as a 20-year-old, seeing that in real time and the subsequent results of it, I've been through a lot. I've been through a lot in the last 20 years. We've all been through a lot. Anyway. The woman's voice just made me think of Homegirl, and that had to call and tell you guys that I thought that was hilarious. Thanks, and of course, love you too. Bye.
Thank you, Allegra.
Thank you.
That's who should have called in to the LAPD.
Right.
Like, this is ridiculous. Cut the crap.
We are adults.
Right. We will not beat the blacks. All right, next voicemail.
Hi, Rod and Karen. It's Michelle. I gotta say, I love your last two episodes. One, Roy Wood Jr. is one of my favorite comedians. He's from Birmingham. I was born in Birmingham. I love him. He is hilarious. I hope he'll be back on before the end.
Uh-oh. Did we lose Michelle?
No, did you?
Let me see. Oh, we might. That might have been it.
Karen, it's Michelle.
Hold on.
Little JPEG.
Oh, okay. No, it just stopped for some reason.
The end of the year.
There we go.
And then also the Welcome to the Cookout episode. I don't know if you use Canva.com to create that.
I did.
Cookout. JPEG. That was hilarious. I loved that whole segment. I don't know if I love Welcome to the Cookout segment more than Black Capitalism, but right now they're tied for the best news segments on the Black Guy Who Tips. And lastly, I just want to say thank you guys for making this whole time a little light with your comedy, and I really appreciate it. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Michelle. We appreciate you. And it's weird because like I said, I wasn't feeling that creative through all this, but it's kind of been coming back. And it's weird because creative for a podcast is different than like music or art, as far as like, you know, paintings and shit. But some of the stuff that does like feel inspirational, you know, for me is being like, okay, I'm noticing the trend of articles, all these white people doing the bare minimum, sometimes more than the bare minimum, but doing a lot of stuff because they feel guilty about blackness and stuff right now, and they want to help out. And wouldn't it be funny if we were combining the cookout idea with these white folks wanting to, you know, to like trying to be down? And what if we made the idea, I know you shouldn't really explain all your jokes, but what if you made the idea like, anyone gets in, you know what I'm saying? Like, the whole thing is any of them can get in, even if they're terrible. We know they're racist, we don't want them in at all, it's a fictional thing anyway. And with my reputation of just letting people in for the minimum as a joke, I'm like, yo, what would be funnier than just being like, all the racist white people that just, Mitt Romney, hey, come on in, George W. Bush, come on in. And I was like, oh, and then we could play like a different popular black song that you hear at cookouts and shit for each person. And then eventually I was like, ooh, the songs could like kind of tie into who the person is, and that becomes kind of a joke, you know, it's playing Stomp for Mitt Romney and stuff. And it's still off the fly sometimes, so because I don't know which ones I'm going to do each time, and the song choice is kind of like on the fly. But you know, I like to think in my mind, I was like, this is hilarious to me, you know, and then Karen doesn't know until I do the show about the segment and stuff. And then, you know, Karen liked it, the audience liked it, people were, you know, of course, miffed, you know, on Twitter, like, Rod, you keep letting these people in and shit. But that's the point, you know. So I'm just glad that a lot of people really resonated with it. And honestly, man, like, I feel like at this point in time, the calling that I feel and the calling for the show is to kind of make, to feel, still find some lightness in this.
Yes.
To still find some humor in this. You know, I watched Dave Chappelle's 8:46. It's on YouTube, I think. Maybe it's on Netflix too. I watched that the other night, and even Dave Chappelle can't really find the funny in this. You know what I mean? And that's a dude that, you know, pretty much laughs at all fucked up things as his method of coping. I've already spoken about some of his stand-up specials and how I feel about them, but just in general, he couldn't find nothing funny to say. Like, it's just not a very funny time. These aren't funny things happening. So it really does make me feel like we're doing a good job when we can find some funny angle to tackle these same stories that other people are, you know, ripping off their shirts and crying in the streets over. Mm-hmm. You know, to be able to say, hey, you can still listen to us and still crack a smile, and you don't have to feel bad about it. You know, like, you're not coming here and then we're being like, if you said you a piece of shit, like, we're being like, you're right, this is sad, but also it's a little funny, you know. And I'm glad that it's resonating with people and that they get it. All right, Jen is our last Jen from Brooklyn.
Hey y'all, it's Jen from Brooklyn. Hope you're having an amazing weekend. I just wanted to call and say hello and thank you for all the episodes this week. Appreciate y'all as always. What was I gonna tell you to y'all? Number one, I would like to formally request that y'all bring Justin on this week or soon because we miss him. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm gonna go premium. I'm yes. gonna get fancy, but I need like Karen Justin energy. Like, I love that dynamic. So, you know what I'm saying?
Welcome to the club.
My formal, request, you know what I'm saying? If he has the capacity. Mm-hmm. Also, I watched Dave Chappelle's special. I'm sure y'all are going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought about y'all the whole time. I thought it was really interesting and powerful. And it's just funny that I'll be watching stuff and thinking about y'all because I wonder what y'all are thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that he talked about Candace Owens because I had never seen her face until like last week. And she was talking about George Floyd's record, and Dave Chappelle obviously brought that up, and I was like, I'm not even gonna call out her name. But anyway, I love y'all. Hope that y'all having a great week. And yeah, thanks for everything. Bye.
Thank you. So first of all, yeah, I'm definitely, it's so funny. I was, thinking about reaching out to Justin already to be like, yo, one of these regular episodes, you need to come back. Cause people that aren't behind the paywall, they don't get enough of Justin. And, you know, and we've been able to kind of have people on lately, you know, more and more guests because everyone's at home, you know.
Yeah, we see Justin weekly anyway.
Yeah, so sometimes I forget that there's a lot of people that, you know, don't get to kick it with Justin and stuff. And I think, you know, if you can afford it, like, it's probably best to hear him on the premium side because, you know, it's just us doing our thing, having fun back there. But, yeah, I'll definitely bring him back for the regular show. Tomorrow we have Corey and Vernon from Living Color.
Yay!
To be on the show. You know, there's big fans, and that's gonna be dope. And then the second thing was 8:46. So the main thing I took from 8:46 is that it's more of a sermon than a comedy special. It's not funny on purpose. There's some jokes to relieve the tension, but they're not jokes. They're not like bits that he wrote and fleshed out. I'm not sure he wrote and fleshed out most of it. I think he had a through line in his head of what he wanted to talk about, and I think he accomplished that. I think Dave Chappelle is one of the most foremost thoughtful comedians and people when it comes to race in America, period. And to see him kind of get to do his thing for 30 so minutes on strictly just race I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was excellent. I thought it was catharsis. Like, for a lot of Black people, we've been feeling that, and you just kind of wish somebody could make sense of it or tell the world this is how we feel right now. I thought he made some great points about, you know, he's not going to, it's ironic because he's giving his point of view in a stand-up special, but he's basically saying, like, my point of view shouldn't trump the view of what's happening in the streets.
Right.
Listen to what the people are saying in the streets. Don't listen to me. I'm happy to be in the backseat and let the kids drive the car. They're the ones making the discussion right now. You know, and he talked about how racist touched him. The officer who shot the guy in Walmart that had the toy gun had pulled him over the day before. You know, that's how small their town is. And he said that almost broke the town apart. You know, and I think with Chappelle, he's very much a, you know, we can all get along type of person. You know, he's expressed that when Trump won. You know, I think he does have a fundamental belief, or at least seems to have, but we can still kind of figure this out. And in this special, it sounded like he had put that down and said, maybe we can't really figure this out, or it's not up to, someone else will have to figure this out, because, you know,
oh, it's more complicated.
I'm just frustrated right now.
Right.
All that stuff. So I thought that was, I thought it was good. That being said, y'all know how my brain works. As I watched it, I was like, here's where everyone's going to be upset with him. And here's where, you know, cause you got to keep in mind, he said some very transphobic jokes and shit over the years. So there's a lot of people coming into it with their arms folded, looking for the angle to kind of hate it and to tell us why he should shut the fuck up or whatever. Which is interesting because it's at a time where he's saying, like, literally, hey, I should shut the fuck up when it comes to this. This, I'm not important. But what I thought was interesting was he didn't mention any Black women or trans people when he talked about people being killed by the cops. Now, Dave Chappelle's not on Twitter.
Mm-mm.
So Twitter is the main place I see that fight. Of if you bring up George Floyd, but you're not bringing up Breonna Taylor, that says you don't care about Black women. And that may be the reality for Twitter. I don't know that that fight has made it offline in a way that
I don't think it has yet.
Has, you know, and it may though, but it has. I don't think it has yet.
Mm-mm.
In a way that it pierces the average person. I think the average person still thinks of murders from the cops as a thing that happens to Black men.
Yes.
And not really anyone else.
Correct.
That's obviously not fair. That's mm-hmm. not right. That, you know, and it's done this thing. And I guess we can talk about it since we're on the podcast and I can say it in context, but it's done this thing that's really cynically fucked us all up. You know, the gender wars between Black men and women. And of course, you know, when you bring in like trans, people and their experiences, it's done this thing where it's almost like people are making teams and sides, and it's like a weird version of the of a stock market or something, almost, where you invest in certain people's deaths. This is so morbid to me, and it's why I don't want to participate in it in that type of way, where I'm going, because they're
no
all victims. Well, not just that, but they're all victims of police killing us.
Yes.
So to me, it's us, it's Black people, period. There's not a favorite or least favorite within that. I understand there's privileges within that.
Yes.
There's hierarchy in that. But I, you know, I remember a long time ago, we were talking about Alton Sterling, I believe he was killed. And someone brought up how he was convicted of sexual assault of a minor or something at one point. And I'm like, I can hold both of those things at the same time. That's terrible, and he should not have done that. And that's, you know, maybe I would never want to be around Alton Sterling in my life. But at the same time, I have to hold that the cops killed that man in cold blood.
Right, right.
And that's not okay either.
It doesn't justify him dying like that.
Right. And I think that's what a lot of people lose that shit when they go on mm-hmm. social media and fight about it all day, where they really are like, if you can't spout off the names of certain people, then you don't care that the cops killed them.
Right.
And I think that's a horrible assumption. I think that's a horrible assumption. And one of the reasons I think it's horrible is because it's so easy to perpetrate. Mm-hmm. So now you really do have people substituting in. They don't actually give a fuck, but I learned three names and now I can spout them off the top of my head. So that means I give a fuck. But that doesn't really mean you give a fuck. Mm-mm. Just because you know Rakeisha Boyd, just because you know Sandra Bland, you know, just because you know, Breonna Taylor, that doesn't necessarily mean, like, because I care so much about black women and blah, 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 you know? So it's very, and I think the whole thing has become so performative. I think even saying people's names as hashtags and shit like that has become very performative. It's as performative as these companies saying Black Lives Matter, and you know they don't actually give a fuck. Mm-mm. You know? So it's just a complicated, ugly feeling that I have when it comes to these, you didn't say this person, or you did say that person, and oh, you picked this type of victim, you know. And I think we start aligning behind them in a way that's like they're celebrities or something, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm riding with Tony McDade, like this is the Tony McDade high. And all I keep thinking is they fucking killed this person. This is not a thing for us to identify around and fight out with each other like it's Beyonce versus Rihanna. Like, this is all fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So being like, I'm riding for this team when you're like looking at the GoFundMe amounts and measuring them to each other, this is death. You know what I mean? This is death. No, money's not going to bring them back, and no amount of money. And if Breonna Taylor's GoFundMe beats George Floyd, what does it mean? It doesn't mean shit for any of us. You know, like it's all bad shit. You know, so I've been trying to avoid it, but I knew when I watched that would be people, well, he didn't say Breonna Taylor. I'm like, it don't matter. If he would have said Tony McDade, y'all would say, well, that's a trans person. Why would he even say that name? You know, like, you don't fuck with him and you don't like him and you're going to nitpick his shit.
And that's anyway. And that's fine. And you have the right to do that.
But it doesn't make, but you know, and then the other thing too is, there's really not any more a space for people to evolve and be educated amongst people like them.
Right.
Because we're all sharing everything on the internet, you know? And so if you're going to understand that white people are fucked up, men are fucked up, straight people are fucked up, all this shit, there's going to be some learning, education, and unlearning they're going to need to go through, right? Mm-hmm. And where a lot of this stuff happens is in front of everybody, and it's everyone nitpicking every single step of it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think Dave Chappelle comes from a time and a place and a mentality of black men is how, like, that's what he cares about, black men. That doesn't mean he cares about no one else, but he's like, I have a black straight male perspective, and that's the only one I'm interested in advocating for. And he may feel empathy for certain peoples and our identities and shit, but he ain't never gonna say that their oppression is worse than his. And he's never gonna, and he sees everything through the lens of his personal oppression and his group's oppression, black men, right?
So yeah, like most people do,
right? I think he's at this point, we now have what, 10, 20 years of him doing that. We don't have any fucking reason to say this time on the 19th stand-up special, he's going to advocate for trans people. He's going to only be able to advocate for them in the ways that he feels race relates to them, period. So if he sees trans in his mind as a white privilege thing, he will never cross that fucking line in his mind to be like, well, maybe it's not that, you know? Like, he's gonna always see it as that. That's the reason this is in the news, because white men want to be women. He's gonna always do that. The problem for him is that so many people have like what he does. They know he's talented. They want him, and he is capable of it. They would love for him to advocate for them.
Yes.
I still feel like that Alphabet Mafia bit he did a couple years ago, or last year, was brilliant. Like summed up so many issues within the LGBTQ community, where he's not even part of this community, and he's able to be like, hey, y'all don't treat everyone in the community the same. Y'all, you know, y'all don't really respect the trans people in your community. Y'all really, you know, y'all don't treat the bi people in the community. It's basically the gays and the lesbians up front and the kids in the back and the trans people outside the car just trying to get in, blah, blah, blah. Great. It's a great bit. I'm not doing it justice, but the fact that it came from him is at once surprising, but also has to be fucking frustrating. Cause it's like, so you can understand on some level, mm-hmm. you see these things, but then you refuse to take it to the next level. And because of his own dogma, he believes that I'm some type of joke samurai, you know, it's all about the joke, you know. But that's not true. He did this whole special without making any jokes. It's barely any jokes in this shit, you know. So like, you can be serious when you think the time is right for seriousness. You just don't think issues of gender, sexuality and stuff, you don't think that's serious. You think that's jokes for you, in your opinion. Now that maybe because you haven't lived that life, whatever, but that's jokes. But watching George Floyd get a knee put on him made you give us 27 minutes of hardcore commentary with a couple jokes sprinkled in. And I think that's who he always is gonna be. That's probably who he always is, and maybe he'll prove me wrong and change, but yeah, I can't see him coming around.
Yeah, and I allot for people to change, like, you know. Yeah. I give them the opportunity. You can always change until you leave this earth. You always have the opportunity.
Yeah, you're right. I think at some point I'd be a fool to keep expecting it.
Yeah. Now something how I have to see for myself.
Yeah.
But you know, if you are willing to take that step, it's up to you. I'm not gonna push or force you to. It's completely up to you.
You want him on your side because he's like the Hulk. He's like Superman. People will listen to him. Hopefully, he will make the joke and change the culture to one of acceptance. You know, that's what you're hoping for. And he won't do it because he knows that he refuses to accept that mantle of responsibility on what he does. It's like, why? I'm just the dick joke, fart joke guy. Leave me alone. But he has some iconic bits that when George Floyd died, people were playing the clip from killing him softly. Sprinkle some crack on this nigga. So he does things that resonate forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's frustrating. He's a frustrating guy for a lot of woke people. You know, they want him to do what he did yesterday, but you know, sprinkle some other marginalized identities on it, and then they would be cool with it, you know.
Yes.
And to a certain extent, some of them are invested in not liking him, but for people that aren't invested,
right,
who really, you know, I think the same thing of JK Rowling is transphobic. She's never gonna not be transphobic, in my opinion. I can't, because too many people have made the argument.
Right.
Like, what is, you think there's something Dave Chappelle hadn't heard? You think there's something JK Rowling hadn't heard? They just need to hear it the right way. This is who they are. This is what they believe. They won't come but so far to your side, right? But with like a JK Rowling, I think a lot of those people are frustrated.
Right.
Because they invested in her.
Right.
They invested in her Harry Potter stuff.
Right.
They made an identity of this. They got mm-hmm. fucking the Slytherin tattoos and mm-hmm. you know, they started all these like podcasts and groups, yeah, and watch
spending
and
money
up
all over the world, going to these places that are Harry Potter themed. Yes.
So when you invest in somebody, you want an investment back. But that's the thing, it's one of the reasons I'm so glad I just never put the celebrities on this type of feeling like it's a relationship, because they literally don't know me. They don't owe me
correct.
Shit. There's no promise of them to be a good person.
Mm-mm.
There's no promise that because they have a lot of my money that they have to care about my life.
Right.
But a lot of people can't shake that. They fundamentally believe if I give you money and time or whatever, you're supposed to care about me. And maybe that's our entitlement. Maybe there's some other things we need to figure out. Mm-hmm. But that's what happens with these people like a Chappelle, a JK Rowling. We're upset they're not reflecting us back at us, but they were never that. They were mm-hmm. always a flashlight. They were reflecting themselves at us.
Right.
And we
right.
and we looked for ourselves and what they were putting out, but they're not actually taking in us and then going, let me regurgitate your opinions back to you. They're not doing that.
Right.
You know, so for me personally, man, I've been, you know, I feel like I say this every special he does and a bunch of other shit I listen to, but I've long been able to be like, I don't feel any moral obligation or attachment to somebody's art.
No.
So I can find it good while also going, yeah, it's fucked up. I can find it terrible while saying, oh yeah, this, I actually agree with everything Bill Maher is saying right now in the stand-up special. I think his shit is whack. It's not funny to me.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's not about not liking Bill Maher either. Just literally, the motherfucker says for an hour and 10 minutes, everything I agree with. I'm like, yep, mm-hmm, that is how they be. And I can't laugh because it ain't funny.
Right, right.
And then I have somebody else sit up there and say a bunch of shit. What's that motherfucker's name? not Patrice O'Neal. I can't remember his name. God, he's on Black Jesus. That nigga.
Yes.
He makes horrible, misogynistic, terrible jokes. And he's funny as shit to me. Robin Harris.
Yes, that's another
bunch
one.
Of shit I don't agree with.
Mm-mm.
Cried, tears, asthma attack laughter. You know, so it's just, I don't know if I'm one of the only people like that, or yeah. if I'm one of the only people that'll just fucking admit it.
Is it right, right, you know what I mean? Right, you'll admit it.
I don't know which it is. Either way, like, I don't leave those, I don't leave those situations and feel like, oh my God, I've sinned, or, you know, I need to justify this. No, I thought the Chappelle special was really poignant, really good, not very funny. And every problem that people say they have with it, those problems exist in the work. It's as misogynistic as any of his other work. This one's not necessarily transphobic, but I heard that he made jokes about Don Lemon's sexuality, but it was taken out, or he took it out or edited it out. To which, in a way, I'm like, I mean, y'all should take that one as a win. I don't even know why they would take that as a, because I saw Sarah Spain being like, yes, you know, he still can't get over this. I'm like, well, if he didn't put it in a special, then maybe y'all won. Like, maybe you got him to shut the fuck up about something for once. Take the win. You know, sure, it would be better if he never said it at all, but you didn't see it. It wasn't in a special. Maybe someone got to him and said, is this really going to be helpful for what the point you're making? Are we going to end up in another conversation about your transphobia, homophobia?
Right.
You know, so just take the win. Y'all got him to do something you wanted him to do. But I think when you hate the dude, or you don't like him, or you really low-key love him and want him to come around, you just mad he didn't come to your side all the way.
Right. So. And they're not obligated to.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was great, poignant, all that shit. But yeah. Okay, this is the last thing I'll say. Say whatever you want to. I'm totally fine being seen as still having some misogynist issues and shit. I'm a human being. I'm born in America. I'm a man. All that shit. But I am never gonna play Batman with shit like he said Candace Owens pussy stinks, and he called Laura Ingraham a cunt. I don't know why the fuck liberal people always feel like they need to jump in front of that bullet, but no. Let them fry, cook them. I don't care. Like, I don't know why everybody feel like you have to care about that shit. You know, I saw somebody wrote a piece about that. Oh, you know, you should never have to stoop to that level. I'm like, why did you even watch this special? Like, there's literally no reason to think Dave Chappelle wouldn't call Candace Owens what he called her. What the fuck? Like, fuck them. Like, Candace Owens made a video about how George Floyd deserved to die because he's no hero. He's done crime in the past. Her own conservative black people said that was too far. And we're worried about Dave Chappelle calling that coon a coon? Like, come on, man. When are we gonna... anyway. Sometimes you just gotta let the shit go. Laura Ingraham getting called a cunt is not my fucking hill to die on.
Mm-mm.
Guys, we should never call women a cunt. She's a cunt. Bye. Peace. Yeah, I guess I'm a bad person now. You know, I guess I'm so bad it's almost like I told LeBron to shut up and dribble, and said Drew Brees made great points, right? Well, I said George Floyd needs to die. I guess you're gonna have to just deal with the degrees of badness, right? And apparently to me that's very low on the bad factor, is calling those evil motherfuckers bitches and cunts and hoes and shit. I don't care, and I don't have to care. Same way that I'm a fat person, people fry Jason Whitlock for being fat. I have never once been like, well, you know, guys, it's really unfair. As a fat person, no, Jason Whitlock, y'all go ahead, go ahead and fat shame him. I don't care. If I catch a stray, then I'll just take the stray for y'all. Because honestly, it's a better world when we're all recognizing that dude's a piece of shit. And I know you could be a better person and all this stuff, but don't ever let me catch you saying some shit about how Dave Chappelle shouldn't have went that low, and then also mocking Michelle Obama when she told you, when they go low, we go high.
Come on.
Then what the fuck are you talking about? Because that's as high as you can get. Well, we're not going to talk bad about Candace Owens' hair. Well, then don't say nothing bad about Michelle. Right? You don't have to defend these horrible fucking people. You know, just so you can morally dunk on everybody. Those people are pieces of shit, man. And I, like, there has to be a line somewhere. That's fucking mine. Like, you sitting out here literally advocating for innocent black people to get killed by the cops and making excuses for the shit, and I'm supposed to be like, yeah, but you didn't need to say she was a bitch. Get out of here. You know, well, we don't have to call Terry Crews a coon. Okay, all right. Well, you don't have to, but somebody will feel compelled to do so.
I guess they will.
Somebody. And you know what else you didn't have to? You didn't have to write that Dave Chappelle shouldn't have did it. You didn't have to do, no one has to do anything.
Mm-hmm. I can just look at it and go on by my life. Yeah. I do that a lot of shit, y'all.
Right. So judge away then. I'll be judged for that one. I'll take it. Anyway, cunt is a white man's word. That's not even, I'm not saying no black women get offended by that.
That's actually
a
funny word to me. I know that, yeah. You know, I know that sounds funny because I didn't grow up a cunt, so. At first, I was like, what is offensive by it?
I think you got to know some white people to really get offended
right.
by it. Like, I didn't know it was a thing until, what was that shit?
I didn't know it was a thing either.
Deadwood. Deadwood was when I was like, oh, cunt. Is that bad? Like, I was in a room full of white people.
Yeah.
They was group watching it. I was like, why is all the white women so upset right now? They're like, oh, that's a bad word. I was like, what does it mean?
That was my next question. What the hell it mean?
Like I don't know. Maybe if you grow up around a lot of white people, it fucks with you.
Right, because I was like, I've never heard what am I then I was like, am I supposed to be offended? Then yeah. I was explaining. I was like, psh, I'm not offended by that shit.
They really could have inserted any Dr. Seuss word, and I would not have understood.
Mm-mm. Like, they had to explain that to me too.
She's a flippity bibbit. I was like, why is everyone so upset?
I don't get it. Okay, I guess
don't say flippity bibbit around white women. What is? Anyway, all right, we got some emails. Miss Marty Kins writing in, you guys are such an inspiration. You are the sounds of blackness needed. I live so far away from home, and the only real-time images I see of blackness are protests and black bodies. So glad you do what you do. I had to work until 3:45 a.m. over here, and y'all were live on your podcast, and y'all really helped folks out. Thank you.
Aww.
I did not know.
I be forgetting we'll be in other time zones. Mm-hmm. So you out there like Wonga, you and tomorrow is Sunday. Where you at?
I'm listening to the back catalog and catching up, and your thoughts on corporate America hit me. You hear me? This is just an appreciation email. No real commentary. Me, Miss 1KO, the lady who came to the live show with one good leg. Oh, that was you?
Aww,
thank you, sis.
Thank you, baby.
P.S. Your IG cooking pics are about to have me out here cooking and losing weight. LOL, keep it up.
Thank
well, you know,
you.
I try to cook a little bit. You know, appreciate you for checking them out. All right, we got one more. This is from C4, who said, Cass. Cass always. Ugh, I'm sorry with these names, y'all. My bad. Hey, Rod and Karen, I'm glad y'all talked about the gray areas of the push to defund the police. I admitted earlier this week that I was a bit confused because a lot of folks conflating defund with abolish, including abolitionists who insist that to state defund does not mean get rid of law enforcement and appropriation of abolition work. I was also confused by why so many took offense to saying that they were confused. Many people were activated for the first time 3 weeks ago. I doubt in people's exhaustion and rage, they freshen up on law enforcement theory.
Right.
Yeah, it's also crazy because my favorite insult now is telling someone to read a book that you know they're not going to be able to read that book by the next tweet. So, like, maybe slow down and explain the concept of the book to them, or stop fucking talking about the shit and getting the attitude with everybody. Then ignore the person that doesn't understand. Like,
right.
I do that sometimes. I'll tweet something out. Somebody will ask some basic ass question, and I know that either I'm going to get an attitude with them or I'm going to come off smarmy and smart. So I just ignore the fucking, I'm like, okay. You know, it happens.
Yeah, you don't have to engage with everybody.
You know, mute them if you have to. I mean, we're human. I go, you can't do that with everybody. But some of these motherfuckers spend more time arguing over the shit than explaining what it means.
Correct.
I'm for defunding the police as I understand it. And as you both explained it, I'm frustrated that the abolition advocates perceive questions about the logical endpoint of abolition as an opposition to the idea. It comes off as a distrust of the very people we're fighting for, to be able to take in the uncertainty of no policing or lack of accountability structure. For what it's worth, I could be convinced that the uncertainty may be worth it. But the deflecting from the obvious questions feels so reminiscent of paternalistic, we know what's best for you white folks coming in to black communities to sell a dream that may cost more than it gives. Yes.
Agreed. And I feel the way that you feel. it's one of those things where if we're gonna talk about it, talk about it. If you're not gonna talk about it, just keep doing your thing and people will keep ignoring you. If you want your message out there, you've got to explain your message. You can't be like, here's my message. Well, then I have a few questions about your message. Well, bitch, you don't believe me. You don't support my, what? I don't even know what you stand for.
Right.
How can I be offended and not support something that I don't know what you do?
And keep in mind, we've been here before. Like, this was, like, when people were suggesting prison and rehab for everybody, this is a similar movement. Hey, this will fix everything. We know what to do. And it was black people telling us that. It wasn't some white people from coming down from the mountain. We pitched the idea to white people that were empowered to say, do these things for us or else we won't vote for you anymore. This is what happened in the past. So show me that this won't be that. Right? So now you don't want to hear no questions. Move with all speed towards whatever the fuck theoretical ideas we have. And if you ask questions, you don't care about black people, you know? So I get why people feel frustrated, man.
Right. And it's a turn off. And then they be like, well, fuck it then. And you just don't care. No, I don't care because you won't take the time to explain.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've been thinking about is the moralization of black folks' strategies for liberation. Y'all have touched on many strategies. What we know is respectability, politics in the late 1800s, self-determination, prosperity, divestment in the early 1900s, to nonviolent civil disobedience in the 1960s, to self-defense in the 1960s and the 70s, integration, assimilation, and all the other strategies during those times and thereafter. Yeah. And I'd even say the respectability stretched into the 1900s. Shit, you know, Ida B. Wells and all them, Frederick Douglass was talking about needing to dress and look a certain way too. As much as we quote them and love them, man, like, they were, that meant something different. Times was different. Like, it's different. Like, you might, putting on a suit means a lot when they say a Negro will never be able to put on a suit. You know, it meant something different.
Yes, sir.
For some reason, there seems to be a string of moralism put on all of them. The actual objective, how can we get them to stop killing us and start treating us like human beings, is conflated with the popular strategy of the day. Yes. As much as many of the younger activists today reject a lot of the strategies of previous generations and elders themselves, there seems to still be this need to moralize strategy. Yes. Defund/abolish seems as much as a purity test as its potential policy. It's like there's this belief that the black people or of yore didn't care as much or weren't radical enough because their strategy didn't work. That's not accurate or fair. Right. I mean, why did they kill these niggas? Like, that's another.
Right.
Whenever they say stuff like, yeah, you know, Martin Luther King, he was just an integrationist and look what integration's done. I'm like, got him killed? If it was so just not revolutionary and that's what white people wanted, they have no problem with it. Why is he dead? Why did the FBI try to destroy him?
Why is he dead?
All this shit is a threat. But maybe there's resentment because the strategies are sold as a kind of moral basis of black resistance when resistance itself is justified given the history of black people in America. It worries me that folks would prefer to moralize, defund/abolish precisely because we don't know what to expect. Like past strategies, there is a known unknown of just how evil and insidious white supremacy is, such that the strategy backfires. It's the corrupt the wish factor of black life in America that is always on time. I don't mind trying something new, but I just wish we give ourselves the grace to say it's another strategy. It may not work, but we're worth trying something different. Yes.
I agree. But the thing is, because of the age we live in and because online and social media pressures, all that stuff, if you admit that, you will have to admit that it's not perfect. And nobody wants to admit that whatever they're suggesting has flaws. No matter what system you have, it's going to have flaws. No matter what system you have, people aren't going to agree with it. No matter what system you have, people are going to fall through the cracks. No matter what system you have, no matter what you put in place, there's going to be something that is not perfect. And because if you start getting to the nuance like that, they would have to admit that this system is not perfect, which most people will be like, okay, cool. And most people will roll with you on that. But because a lot of them spend so much time online arguing with people about the shit, they don't actually want to talk to the people that are actually on their side, the non-social media people that actually are asking questions, that can actually raise money, help you get these things you want in place. The people that actually vote, the people that are actually out there, that are on the streets. You have to, if you want this movement to go forward, you've got to have real life moving people, and everybody can't tweet. Everybody just can't. Twitter can't be your thing. Facebook can't be your thing. You can do that, but you actually got to have a disconnect and have some people out here that's able to explain and able to help other people understand. Because if I understand, I can go to my family members and get them to understand, and then they can get them to understand. But if I'm asking you, the source of this, because you're presenting this radical idea, and your first response is to get offended and angry, how can you expect it to grow?
Yeah, I think also, like, you have to accept that your answers might not work for everybody, and that some answers you don't have.
Mm-mm.
You know, I think also when you're presenting an idea like this, people want you to have all the answers already fleshed out. And in a lot of cases, like, I actually don't know.
Right.
You know, I don't know what we do with this situation. I don't know how we fix that. You know, people are, like, one of their big things is to say, like, have police ever helped in a situation where they're called? Have they ever made anything better? And then they're never ready for you to be like, actually, yes. A couple times I have dealt with police and they've made a situation better.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want, like, they're expecting you to be like, they came and they killed my uncle or some shit, when it's like, you know, there was a fucking white girl drunk as shit knocking on our porch door, and the police came and fucking, you know, got her off of the porch, and then ended up, you know, taking her to her friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't show up and kill anybody, they didn't make it worse or whatever, and I mean, they made it better for me, because I'm worried some dead white girl's gonna be found on my porch, and now I'm going to prison like Bigger Thomas. But,
come on.
But, you know, the maybe they helped me when my car had an issue or some shit. Like,
yeah, David,
this is not a defense of the police. It's just we're recognizing the complicated issue of all these roles police play. Maybe they shouldn't even be the people to do both of those things. AAA can come fix my car. Maybe there's some mental health service that can come get this girl off my porch. I don't, you know what I'm saying? So this isn't me being like, because we love the police. It's just to admit that maybe it's not as black and white for everyone in the way that you're thinking. And so maybe, you know, maybe there's like some area in between to work with people, rather than to just kind of shame them for being like, I'm not 100% sold on all this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, you don't have to have all the answers. So just tell a nigga you don't know. I don't know.
And most people would be like, okay.
Yeah, what are we going to do for restraining orders? I actually don't know what we're going to do about restraining orders. I know that they don't really work that great anyway. So, you know, I don't, you know, but I also don't know what we'll do in the new world we're imagining, you know, because whatever they imagine up, everyone's not going to agree on the imagining thing anyway.
Mm-mm.
You have to accept, like, this is the thing. When you're able to be in charge and have this seat at the table, you're going to have to accept the criticisms and consequences of you being at the table. And if in this world, you know, one of the things that can continually happen to people is a lot of abuse and stuff because we don't even have a place to put somebody, then you're going to have to be the one to bear the brunt of that criticism. That's the same way the system now bears the brunt of those criticisms, right? Like, it just is what it is. So.
Yeah, and not all, but a lot of people that people are arguing with online about this shit, some of them don't even know themselves. Like, I'm just keeping it real. Like, there are some people that are really educated that are actually trying to help, but a lot of them don't. They pick their side and be a defund or right. Abolished, and they're just running with it.
And there's uneducated. A lot of them haven't even read this shit.
Right. Uneducated, and they don't know. And for a lot of them, they can't explain because they don't know themselves.
Yeah, go read a book. Like, if you read the book
that you ain't read,
right, you wrote the thread trying to explain to everybody, so if you read the book, maybe try to break down what it is.
Yeah,
like, and, you know,
and also for a lot of this stuff, like you say, it's really cool to put stuff online when it's in theory.
Yeah,
but when it's accountability, that shit changes.
Well, hopefully we'll see that, man. I think some places are going to try. Minneapolis, it looks like they're going to try some things.
And
if it looks good, there's a lot of pressure on those people. But if they figure something out, maybe something good will come of this. Because some of these other solutions I've seen proposed, I'm definitely not fucking, you know, privatized police and shit. I'm not fucking with that. That's terrible.
Yes.
That should be illegal even.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we'll see what happens. I do understand the misgivings and shortcomings of this system and why that needs to change, you know, and I think that's why you see more people hopping on defund and abolish. Because Defund actually seems to have more answers. Mm-hmm. Abolish seems to have less. It's like, it's so simple that it leaves the least amount of answers.
And people are like, oh, you don't got no answers? Well, right. Then we gonna defund then.
Abolish. We just don't have no police. Okay, so what happens to the racist ass people that are police right now as they go back into the community and can do whatever the fuck they want?
And the answer is, I said abolish. Okay, bitch. Right. Okay. I understand you said abolish. Can we give me something? I said what I said. Let's abolish it. Right. You're still not answering the question.
If we abolish it, bad things will stop happening, you know? So we'll see. Anyway, guys, the last thing is, anyways, those are my rambling thoughts. Thanks for all you do, Cash, always. Thank you, Cash. You gave us a lot to think about.
Yes, thank you.
And talk about. And then, of course, we also got a letter in the mail.
Gifts. More gifts. Mm-hmm.
We got this letter. I'm trying to see if it says who it's from.
Does it say it on the envelope?
Oh, Becca.
Okay.
It did say on the envelope. To Rod and Karen, I've cried every day since this asshole, Chauvin, and his coward cop buddies killed George Floyd. It's been passive prior to this. I didn't expose myself to the stories. I saw the Black Lives Matter movement on the news, and I refused to believe their message. I wanted to believe we were better than they said. Of course, I felt sad and angry for Trayvon and Tamir and so many others, but I did nothing. I didn't speak on it. I didn't engage in viewing actions around it. I started to realize the gravity when this racist fuckboy, he killed Samuel Du Bois outside of Clifton in Cincy. He killed that man who just tried to protect his rights as an American and to not be unlawfully detained. I saw the video. I listened to his family. I spoke out on social media. This was a super passive approach. After what I've seen these last few days, I realized I needed to take better action. So I committed myself to patronize more black-owned businesses where I can. Listen, your girl still needs Amazon, but there are a lot of things I can get from these smaller businesses. Y'all are the first of many. I've been listening to the free shows off and on for about a year now. I won't take in enough content to subscribe to premium, and I still gotta be smart, but I have wanted to contribute. I recently paid off a lot of debt. Pocket money has been available, and I think supporting y'all is a good way to spend it. Keep your commentary going. It's showing me things I've never considered. I think you all take a good approach to these topics. I love that the commentary is real, but you also manage to find humor in these topics. I appreciate that about your show. It helped me see a different point of view without making me feel like a piece of shit with white guilt. Although, trust me, I still feel it watching some of these protests, riot videos, and what the cops are doing on live, and still don't care. I want you and the communities of color to thrive. I hope my commitment will help. Please accept this $40 donation for your entertainment company. I'm sending in my first tithe. It won't be my last. Feel free to share this with our friends if you want. This isn't about getting credit or points. I needed to express myself and start to do better. Thank you for allowing me to do so and for all your hard work. God bless, Becca. Thank you, Becca.
Thank you.
And we're gonna use this $20 on something. Okay. I'll make sure the lights all this down, you know, coronavirus, you know, gotta be careful out here.
None person towards you, coronavirus.
But, thank you for real. Yes. That's dope. You know, I'm glad that, our podcast reached you in that way. And, it's dope that you're going to be supporting, black businesses and stuff out there. Hopefully, you know, this is not something that you just, stop, you know, at some point. Hopefully you, continue to do this. And I don't mean stop for us. I mean, just in general for other people, you know, I think that's very admirable. I know a lot of people are trying to find ways to help and trying to find tangible ways to, do things that make them feel somewhat better, you know, helpful. And, you know, you're not alone in that. You know, a lot of people feel that way. I know black people that are like, I'm only buying stuff from black people now.
I've gone uh I've gone more out of my way than ever, knowing that a lot of black people didn't get a lot of money due to them with all the loans and all that shit. They got skipped. So a lot of times when I'm on social media and I see people like post these lists, I'll actually go in. It's a dude out in Seattle. He sells spices and stuff at that Piker's Peak Mark out there. And I got some honey hot sauce from him, and it is absolutely delicious. I put that shit on some pizza. I'm probably gonna order some more stuff. And when I see stuff like that, I know I've ordered like barbecue sauce from black people and things like that. Like, I actually will purchase stuff from them, because you know, you see these things, you know, for us, it's hard for us to get our names out there. A lot of with the internet, it takes things that normally was to the community and make it wider spread. So, you know, I will pay, you know, I probably have to pay a little bit more because I'm paying for the shipping to get here to Charlotte and things like that. But I'm willing to pay it when I have it, just so I can just show support to black people. And sometimes that means you have to pay more. And I understand we live in a society where everybody wants everything to be Amazon priced, but bitch, everything can't be Amazon priced. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they say, you know, check on your black friends right now. And I've been saying for a while, write a check on your black friends. Okay, just write a check to us. Dear black friends, this amount of money. That's what we want. So, you know, don't just check on them. Write a check on them. Okay. And we appreciate the checks. Okay. We are out here. I'm listening. They writing about us in these oh, that's what I meant to talk about. We got written about a couple times. Let me give me a second.
Yay!
But they're writing about us now on all these lists of people that want to like make sure black people get credit for these podcasts and shit.
Yeah,
you know, people reaching out to
credit
us.
Where credit's due.
And you know what, I will accept every last white guilt click. Every last white guilt listen, because I don't know when this shit is gonna end, you know. White guilt is not the most reliable form of support.
Nope, because the second it's offended, it leaves.
Yeah, so you know, you can always opt out. So yeah, there's one on Backtracks FM. It's a 6-minute read article, but Backtracks FM, and it's called Amplifying Black Voices in Podcasts Comedy. I will share this in the chat for you guys, if you, and I'm try to remember to put a link in the show notes for people, because I think it always helps when they feature us and then we click on the things. And we was at the top of this page, y'all.
Hey,
here are 9 black led podcasts using their humor to make quite a splash. And The Blackout Tales puts a great spin on deep issues by infusing podcasts with a heavy dose of hilarious comedy. Rod and Karen Morrow provide a witty and humorous black voices to politics, current events, and pop culture to create a space of empathy, inclusion, and a lot of laughter. Regularly featured on news outlets, consistently trending on the podcast comedy charts, Rod and Karen are a refreshing dose of quality daily content well worth a listen. That's dope. And they have other Writing and Raving with Yamanika, Best Friends with Nicole Byer and Shazia Shamada, The Read, of course, Small Doses with Amanda Seals, The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Horrible Decisions, I know a lot of our fans, we share with them, Brilliant Idiots, Charlamagne Tha God and Andrew Schultz, y'all's faves, Sibling Rivalry, is Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange. So you know, they definitely you know, gave us a big shout out in Backtracks FM, so we appreciate that.
Yay.
And then the other one, we actually got interviewed for their podcast in addition to them writing about us. But let me see if I can find the link, because I know I saved it. They wrote about us. Man, why can't I find this link? I know I saved it. You know what, I'll just search the tag. But we also have Black Lives Matter 6 podcast featuring black voices. It's on Verbal, V-U-R-B-L, and they interviewed us on their podcast as well. So, you know, hopefully that means that we'll be able to plug the interview soon.
Yes.
And I'll put that in the chat as well. You guys can check out that link. Miss Smart, yeah, we're the only truly independent non-TV famous on the list. Look at that. Yeah, that's pretty much every list. I shouldn't say every list, that's not true, but a lot of lists we do be the one. But yeah, Verbal did one, and they shouted out 6 podcasts. We were the last one on this one, okay? Black Talk Radio Network, New Black Media for the New Millennium. They've been doing podcasts since forever, since 2008, it seems. Fuck Work, But I'ma Go. I've never heard of this
That's
podcast.
That's a name. I might subscribe to that one.
And it's F No U. So FCK. Fuck Work, But I'ma Go.
I'm about to get that one right now.
Yeah. 2 HR professionals and a comedian, and they all talk about work stuff and jokes. 3 Black Geeks podcast. We met
them.
We met them at I think NegroCon. Therapy for Black Girls. Everyone knows this one, I feel like, you know. 2 Dope Queens. Are they still doing shows?
Who knows? You said how you spell it? FCK?
FCK. Okay. Work, But I'ma Go. Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. Reveal. Oh, that's a great podcast. The Reveal podcast. They talk about race, all this stuff. Andy Klein put me onto that one. And then lastly, us, the Blackout Tips. And I think they kind of copied and pasted from this other thing that I think they did. If not, whoever wrote this is a big fan of the show, because they even knew to call me different names throughout the thing, which only fans know.
Yeah, a running joke.
Yeah, I think TV Tropes had something like written about us like this. Let me see if this is the same thing. I forgot to check this out to see if they just copied and pasted it. Let's see. First of all, someone has updated this. This is long as shit. But they didn't copy and paste. So I guess a real fan fucking wrote this recap thing, because they called me Rod and Rodney and Ron.
Like a running joke.
Ron. So, or they could just be terrible at their job and just they thought they were saying Rod, but it seems on purpose.
I think it's on purpose too, because I read that one. It's on purpose.
Yeah, so that was cool, man. Matter of fact, I'll read some of this one. The news, video games, entertainment news, crazy stories are all on the agenda for the Blackout Tips. Rod and Karen present their daily podcast. The humorous name is a carryover from the MySpace blog that Robert once had, and it was retained because it still strikes him as funny. The pair covers serious topics like racism and other atrocities, but as Rod says, we're never gonna let it break us. The hosts, Rodney and Karen Morrow, are 40-something years old married couple from Charlotte, NC, who have produced over 1,900 episodes of their award-winning podcast that is on the top 100 comedy podcasts on Stitcher and is the number one comedy show on Podomatic. They started doing the podcast as a full-time gig after Robert lost his job. They credit to their long-term success to hard work and frequency. Each episode can exceed 2 hours in length. In addition to their busy podcast and schedule, they are frequent guests on other podcasts and internet shows such as Where's My 40 Acres, Making Podcasts Great Again, The Evening Jones, Insanity Check, and Three Guys On. They contribute to podcasting panels and have even held their own podcasting event. The guests, Rod and Karen, are joined by frequent guests who add to the discussion. Some of the past guests have included Nick and Reggie of the What's the Tea podcast, Jamel Hill, podcasters Keith and Hemda from Keith and the Girl, journalist, comedian, activist Elon James White, comedian Roy Wood Jr., adult film star Sarah J., ESPN contributor Bomani Jones, rapper singer Fonte Coleman, comedian writer Ray Sani, comedian Janelle James, poet author Basi Igbe, and NBA shooting guard Anthony Morrow, among others. Why you have to listen? Ron and Karen, together since they were 16, genuinely love and care for each other, which makes their conversation real lively and engaging. They don't spend much time talking about their relationship, but it is clear that they are best friends who respect and enjoy each other. They are Christian, but don't preach as they deliver. Maybe one of us, but don't preach as they deliver an amusing presentation laced with profanity and racial epithets that emphasizes the importance of finding joy in life. The conversations are loaded with Black culture references that make their broadcast relevant to an ethnic audience and interesting to anyone receptive to hearing great comedy and different perspectives. And then it suggested some people listen to certain episodes, 2111 Banana Republican, 2109 The Doors of the Church Are Closed, and 2102 Gun Prom.
I was like, well, I could see us coming up with a name like that.
Yeah, these 6 podcast reviews, then they kind of cap it up. So, yeah, that's cool. You know what I mean? So, thank you for them for writing about us, and we'll make sure to put those links in the show notes for everybody. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow morning, I believe at 10 a.m., we're gonna have Vernon and Corey from the band Living Color on as our guest, and it's gonna be a good time, man. You know, they're big fans of the show, and they're funny, mm-hmm. and you know, all that good stuff. So I see I forget to make the Google Calendar alert for it, but I will figure that out. Okay.
Yes sir.
That's gonna happen. That is on me. But yes, so that's it for today. Thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it.
We do.
10 a.m. Sunday. Yep. So we're good. Yep, we're gonna do it tomorrow. I'll make sure to send them the invite tonight. All right, y'all. See you guys in the morning. For those who listen live and listen later and stuff, we'll see you. Listen to us whenever you do. Until next time, I love you.
Love you too.
Mwah. Yeah.